within the supposed security cordon. Another U-turn, another day, another U-turn. Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner slammed the leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, telling LBC on the weekend he pledged to scrap the two-child benefit cap.
Nigel Farage says a lot of things. So he can say he's going to give jam tomorrow, but with all things Nigel Farage, snake oil salesman, it's not real.
That Farage speech is later today, but will the government U-turn? Plus, the slap that was heard around the world.
French President Emmanuel Macron is at the centre of domestic violence concerns after his wife was allegedly filmed pushing him in the face. I'm Peter Allen, reporting for LBC in Paris.
Plus, the government drive for more apprenticeships. You'll hear more from the Education Secretary in the first hour. All starts after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, dozens of people have been injured after a car drove into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Some 27 people were taken to hospital, including a child and an adult with serious injuries. These men told LBC what they saw yesterday evening.
Where we was on the steps, weren't it? All the kiddies jumping up, crying women crying, hugging girls.
Bang the door behind us.
What's going on?
Because people panicking, they know what's going on, do they?
A 53-year-old white British man from the local area is being questioned. Jenny Sims is Assistant Chief Constable of Merseyside Police.
We believe this to be an isolated incident, and we are not currently looking for anyone else in relation to it. The incident is not being treated as terrorism. We would ask that people refrain from sharing distressing footage from the incident online, and please share any information directly with our investigation team.
The Prime Minister has praised the remarkable bravery shown by the police and other emergency services. Apprenticeship funding is to be shifted away from high-level courses to focus on training at lower levels. Ministers have promised to back the next generation by investing in under-21s in England. They'll create 120,000 new training routes for various trades and healthcare jobs. Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell, says it marks a change in direction for apprenticeships.
Firms will have to fully fund postgraduate apprenticeships. I guess the idea is to try and, you know, help those who can't afford or don't wish to go to university and focus there. But there is some pushback because some industries, notably the NHS, are saying, actually, we get a lot of postgrads who come through the apprenticeship programme, so there may be a hit to them.
Doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action over their latest pay offer. Residents, previously known as junior doctors in England, have been offered an average pay rise of 5.4% this year. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has urged them to vote against strike action. The King will oversee the state opening of the Canadian Parliament on day two of his visit to Ottawa later. He will set out the legislative agenda for Mark Carney's government as Canada faces threats to its trade and sovereignty from the US. Industry figures show food inflation rose for the fourth consecutive month in May. The British Retail Consortium says food prices are now 2.8% higher than a year ago, up from April's 2.6%. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 87.12 after closing down 29 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 19. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales. Sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The people of Britain love their fancy blenders. They've bought loads of them. And luckily, if they bought them with Barclaycard, they earned rewards. In fact, they'll earn rewards on all their eligible purchases.
It's a more convenient way to consume your fruit and veg.
What you buy is your business. Giving you rewards on purchases is ours. Barclaycard. Make money work for you. 28.9% APR representative variable subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, it's 4 minutes after 7 on Tuesday, May the 27th. Coming up in this hour, from joy to tragedy in the space of just seconds. What should have been a parade to celebrate Liverpool's remarkable success, I think 20th title, ends, of course, we've heard the number of injuries, serious injuries as well, an absolute consternation and bewilderment as to how the car was able to move within the supposed cordon. We'll look at that in more detail. Also later in this hour, you'll hear from this Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson.
It will help us to fix our NHS, to create clean energy, to deliver safer streets. Skills are the fuel that will drive a decade of national renewal.
That's Bridget Phillipson talking about apprenticeships, and as I say, you'll hear more in this hour. Tension now at the highest level between the United States and Russia. President Trump told journalists yesterday,
I don't know what the hell happened to Putin. I've known him a long time, always gotten along with him, but he's sending rockets into cities and killing people, and I don't like it at all.
Back with world leaders, that extraordinary Le Slap, when Emmanuel Macron landed in Vietnam yesterday from his wife Brigitte. We'll look at that in full details. It's said that it was done out of affection and love. Oh yes, when I landed in Morocco on the weekend with my fiancé, the first thing I do was slap her across. This is what you do when you have a long flight, isn't it? Utter nonsense. What lies behind that? We'll come back, as I say, to United Kingdom and this possible row. Is there another U-turn on the way for the government, this time over the benefits? Big speech from Nigel Farage later this morning. He may only have a handful of MPs, but Mr. Farage does seem to be making the running, doesn't he? And then elsewhere in the world, an Israeli airstrike, 52 killed in Gaza, including 36 in a school turned into a shelter. Mossab Aleyan was sheltering at that school.
My wife, children and I were sleeping upstairs and we found everything falling on us, windows and stones. We ran out like crazy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Tragedy visited upon Liverpool again. What that city has to endure, do I need to remind you? Of course, the Hillsborough tragedy. This is related to football as well. And this Liverpool, you know the numbers. Just after 6 p.m, this vehicle drove into the crowd. How did it get inside the cordon? 47 people injured, 27 taken to hospital, 4 children among them, all over in seconds. LBC's Northwest reporter Liam Gotting is at the heart of where the story began last night. Water Street in Liverpool joins me now. Liam.
Well, Nick, the carnage of last night is still very evident here on Water Street this morning. Broken glass, beer bottles, abandoned bikes and e-scooters scattered all over the street. Officers line the street from top to bottom, and a huge blue and white forensics tent sits in the middle of the road here in front of me as police continue their investigation. A 53-year-old man from the Liverpool area has been arrested and is being held by police after a car appeared to accelerate into the crowd as thousands of people squashed into Water Street were leaving Liverpool's Premier League title parade. Last night there was a press conference led by Merseyside Police's Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims, where she revealed it's not being treated as terrorism.
We believe this to be an isolated incident, and we are not currently looking for anyone else in relation to it. The incident is not being treated as terrorism. We would ask that people refrain from sharing distressing footage from the incident online, and please share any information directly with our investigation team.
Well, 47 people in total were injured, Nick, in the incident, including 4 children. 27 people were hospitalised, including those 4 kids, and 2 people, including 1 child, suffered serious injuries. 3 fire crews attended the scene and helped to remove 3 adults and a child who were trapped underneath the car after the incident. Les was on Water Street at the time and saw the whole thing happen. This is what he told us.
Where's what, mate? Yeah, what? I even took a photo, not when it happened, obviously.
No.
I took a photo to show my girlfriend, we were stuck here, look. See, there, I mean, the crowd is, and he's played through there like that. I sent the missus saying, we can't move, we're stuck in that. And he's actually come through there. As far as I can see, he's panicked, or whatever he's done, he's just gone bang. Foot down, you never see the car gets fast, didn't he? I'm still traumatised, you see it on TV, don't you? But you never see it there.
Well, last night, Liam Robinson, the leader of Liverpool City Council, described the city as one with a proud history of coming together and supporting each other during challenging times, adding that he has no doubt that that will again be the case over the coming weeks and days. But what happened last night, Nick, brought a devastating and horrible end to what was supposed to be and had been to that point an amazing day of celebration in the city.
Liam, before I let you get on with your other reporting duties today, there are so many questions, as you rightly say, not least of which is, How was this vehicle allowed to be inside the cordon, or had it been parked inside the cordon, or do we not yet know?
Yeah, Nick, those questions are still yet to be answered. So I was stood on the Strand where the main parade was happening. There were metal barriers preventing cars and from people from getting into, you know, the cordoned off area. But at the top of Water Street, where we assume the car will have entered, those questions are unclear. Whether or not that was cordoned off by the police, there were metal barriers cones at this moment, that is unclear. But certainly questions for Merseyside Police and for Liverpool City Council to answer around that.
Liam Gotting reporting 9 minutes after seven. Let's speak with someone who was there. Cathy Long is CEO of Aposto, that's a sports consultancy and stadia events expert, and was at the parade. How close were you to where the awful mayhem took place? May I call you Cathy? Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, I was a little bit away from that, fortunately. I started off at the start of the parade in South Liverpool, where we've traditionally gathered for parades over the years. It always felt like a tradition when we were kids. Mm. Used to feel like it happened all the time. So it was a very emotional and joyous occasion, and then I came into the city centre, but thankfully watched from a friend's roof terrace.
When did you first hear that something had gone wrong, and what did you hear?
As we got into the car, as we were leaving, and I have to say my heart absolutely sank, because this just felt all too familiar. Hearing those tones and people talking about such a joyous occasion turning to tragedy all felt...
When you say it sounded too familiar, you're referring...
It took us back to Hillsborough. It reminded me of Paris, of the Euro final actually there, where, you know, you're wondering whether your friends are okay, they're all checking in on you, and, you know...
Were you at those events, both those events as well, Cathy?
So I was in Paris.
You were, right. Can I ask the level of policing? I appreciate you weren't close to where this took place, but how effective would you say the cordoning was, the fact that roads were closed down, that vehicles were not allowed anywhere near, there were mass numbers of pedestrians?
I have to say, it seemed really well organised, and definitely from very early on. And I think the one thing I've always felt, and I think a lot of people who go to football matches have always felt, is that there is nowhere where crowd safety is taken more seriously than Liverpool, whether it's by the club or by the police or by the city council's event organisers. It's very puzzling as to how this happened.
Now, this was a day, of course, where other football teams were parading. We had Crystal Palace in South London. We had women's football teams, as well as Liverpool, of course, winning the Premier League. Mm. You're in the sports business. How safe are these parades? Massive numbers, in some instances, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. How safe are they?
I mean, they're very safe, generally, because, as you said, there have been lots of parades taking place without incident. I think we all know in the events business that when you get lots of people together, you know, it's there are so many risks that have to be taken into account, and more risks, I think, every year, that it's incredibly complex to plan these things. But generally speaking, they do go off without incident. We've had them before in Liverpool with hundreds of thousands of people, and everybody feels like it's a really safe day out, actually.
Grateful for your time. I'm sorry that such a day of celebration was marred with such tragedy. Cathy Long, your CEO of Aposto, which is sports consultant, stadia and events expert and firm. And you can check out their app, by the way. 12 after 7. Let's turn to a senior police officer. David Lowe served as detective sergeant with Merseyside Police and senior research fellow at Leeds Beckett University, specialising in terrorism and security and policing. Well, thank you, Mr. Lowe. We know that this is not a terror attack. So what will police officers be doing this morning? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Obviously, they've got one male arrested and sort of ascertained why was he there. I mean, you know, everyone knew that Liverpool was going to have this parade. You know, there were people from outside the city who turned up. They know the route. The whole issue is, if you want to go down the Strand, which is by the Dock Road, the Liver Building, for anyone who's familiar with it, you know, that area, which is where Water Street is, unless you're going to be there to celebrate, just stay away. So why was he there? I think you raise a very pertinent question. How did the car get in the first place?
Yes. Obviously, that's the net, or an additional job, isn't it? There seems to have been some kind of failure that the vehicle was able to be mobile within a cordoned area, Dave.
That's right. And, you know, that is of concern because, you know, obviously the Liverpool football bus had passed, so people are now making their way back towards the city centre. And we are talking, you know, thousands and thousands of people there. So we well, I think some of the clips show it. Mm. You can see how busy the streets are. I mean, Water Street's quite a wide street, but you can see the thousands of Liverpool supporters and those who wanted to wish them well in that area. So that's the issue. Why was he there? What was in his mind at the time? And obviously, you look at what's happened. Fortunately, no one so far...
Well, I mean, there's social media reports that a handful of the people are in very serious life-threatening... look, you've been a copper and I've been a journalist. If no one loses their life from the video that I've seen, actually, this will be, well, almost a blessing, because it looks as though... initially, when I saw it, I thought we were looking at multiple fatalities, David.
Yes, I did. When there's certainly one clip someone took from what appears to be a flat in Water Street and looked down. You know, and then, of course, there is that issue of, was it an act of terror? Because everyone was assuming it, and I'm on X predominantly, and I couldn't believe half the things that were being said. I thought, here we go. So I just looked at it and I thought, you know, jumping to conclusions is the wrong thing.
Absolutely. And a word on that finally, David. The police moving perhaps rather quicker than they did with a tragedy that played out in Southport last year. I hate to use a politician's expression, perhaps some lessons were learnt to try and keep people calm and assure them of the facts that this was a white man operating on his own for reasons as yet unknown, but not terror related. David.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it is important because we saw it in, as you said, Southport last year.
Yeah.
It's absolutely important that, you know, people just do as is prompted. If you have footage, send it to the police. Don't jump to conclusions. Let's see what comes out from the investigation. That's the important part.
Grateful for your time, David. Thank you. David Lowe, you're a detective sergeant with Merseyside Police, and you're a senior research fellow at Leeds Beckett University. There's no conversation to be had. It's just appalling, isn't it? But sympathies had to go out to the people of Liverpool. Coming up after the news, we'll be hearing more about world leaders. Vladimir Putin accusing Donald Trump of suffering an emotional overload. Meanwhile, another world leader, Emmanuel Macron, got a slap across the chops from his loving wife.
We were squabbling and I was joking with my wife, and I'm surprised by it. And it becomes some sort of geoplanetary catastrophe.
Yeah, nothing says love like getting a smack in the face. 7:16, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Four children are among 27 people in hospital after a car ploughed into crowds during Liverpool's Premier League victory parade. Ministers have promised 120,000 new apprenticeship and training routes for young adults in England. And the King will give the address at the state opening of the Canadian Parliament later. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales. Sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains on London Overground, the Weaver line isn't running between Edmonton Green and Enfield Town. It's all because of these problems with the overhead wires. And then there are delays to and from Liverpool Street as well. Southern services are delayed by about 15 minutes between East Croydon and Uckfield, and that's all down to a track problem. And Great Western Railway services are delayed between Redhill and Guildford. On the roads, one lane's had to be closed on the M23 southbound between the M25 and Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport, and that's all down to a fuel spillage. Very slow on the A13 westbound to the Pitsea flyover. That's following an accident. And delays on the A12 southbound to Leytonstone after a van broke down earlier.
This is LBC.
Discover outlet shopping at the O2 this spring. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Kate Spade, The Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. And with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, climbing, interactive football, mini golf, paddle tennis, and indoor skydiving, why not stay for the day? Visit us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 and plan your trip today.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. Mm. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Last year, Amazon was the world's largest corporate buyer of renewable energy, meaning all and more of our energy comes from wind farms like this one. Guys, what happened to recording at the solar farm? To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 7, Marius, you're going to be our first caller on the tragedy that played out. I mean, this Liverpool story is one that I'm afraid at the moment has far more questions than it has answers, and I sense it might be like that for some days, nay, weeks to come. Obviously, there are no charges, so we're able to speculate as to what exactly what happened with this 53-year-old man. I meant to tell you what's at the front page of the newspapers this time, but you can probably guess, quite rightly, I think all of them, certainly, but not the FT. But anyway, Daily Mail, horror at the parade. Exactly the same words for the Daily Express. The Sun, horror as car hits cop fans. And let's just, horror at the victory parade is also the Eye. That picks up, doesn't it? The one paper that goes with something else is the Metro. Putin's gone absolutely crazy. This is the war of words. Sadly, there's a war between Ukraine and Russia. There's a war of words between the US and Russia. We'll have more on that later in the show. And the Financial Times tells us that EU countries are pushing for a swift deal with Washington to head off terrorists. Quickly to the LBC app, where they've got eyewitnesses. There's everything you need to know and the level of detail that we can't give it because they have so many other stories to cover. But everything is there, as I say, on the LBC app that you need to know. One other story I'll just pick up, well, not at random. See, this is, I've been very careful because the city of Liverpool has suffered enough down the years because of rumour and claim and counterclaim. But the Mail Online is going with the idea. And I think we can say, in fact, I know we can say this because there's no charges. They're suggesting that this driver had left a bar, the 53-year-old man who crashed into 47 people, leaving dozens of them in hospital, that he had left a bar. So there is the speculation that perhaps he was drunk, that he drove into a crowd, he then panicked, and he thought the only way out was to press the accelerator, which is quite extraordinary if it's true. But as I say, I'm not saying that is the case. I'm merely representing what is. And there's so much, by the way, online that I won't share with you. But that does at least seem a potential cause as to what happened. And that's on Mail Online. All details, as I say, on the LBC app. Right, let's get your voices on the radio. Marius in Northampton. Marius, now you've worked in this sort of area, have you? Control of people, is that right?
Yes, I have, yes.
So how was that? Are you a police officer?
No. I'm a private contractor.
Right.
I worked in traffic and crowd control situations in the past.
What sort of events do you get called up to then, Marius?
The popular ones are things such as Liverpool yesterday, or you'll get the Tour of Britain bicycle race.
I see.
If I can just say, in my experience, that most of the time when we have failures or breakdowns is when a member of the public physically moves the barrier out of the way.
Right, okay.
There's a thing called a soft barrier and a hard barrier.
Go on. Now, a hard barrier is one of those metal ones, I would imagine, is it?
No. A soft barrier is you use, like, staggered barriers, or you man the barriers just to warn traffic that you're imminently going to close the road.
Right.
Then you introduce a hard barrier when the road is closed.
So what is what does a hard barrier look like?
Well, it's the barriers. An example would be what's called a Concorde barrier.
Those fences, those steel panels that you can
drop.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, right.
Some of them are vertical and some lean back in toward the crowd.
Right, okay.
A lot of them have a device where you can put advertising hoardings in them.
Okay, right. Okay.
So, but the thing is, I say that most times when we've had issues, it's when somebody in the crowd or a member of the public thinks that the event is over and they move the barriers out of the way and drive through. I've had that many times.
What is the correct course of action if that takes place?
Well, it's because they're civilians, often, that man the barriers, where you're powerless to sort of physically stop the person. You can't apprehend them as such. If there's a police officer there, then they can. But, of course, the police officers are deployed in a different way.
All right. Lastly, what's the most anxious moment you've had in your experiences working with large crowds?
Most anxious moment I had was in the Tour of Britain when two individuals decided that they wanted to drive through the route. They got out of the car, moved the barrier, they drove through and left the barrier open. So people behind them thought, the procession's gone, right. We can drive through.
Right. And then you and your colleagues have got the job of stemming the flow, effectively.
That's right, yes.
All right. Hey, thanks for all your experience. Good luck the next time you're working in that sphere. Ernie, you'll be the next caller. But we go to other matters, indeed, to show we are a global programme in every sense of the world. We go overseas and we hear that Russia has accused Donald Trump of falling victim to an emotional overload. Well, here is President Trump with this message for the Russian president, telling journalists on the weekend...
Yeah, I'll give you an update. I'm not happy with what Putin's doing. He's killing a lot of people, and I don't know what the hell happened to Putin. I've known him a long time, always gotten along with him, but he's sending rockets into cities and killing people, and I don't like it at all.
Let's turn to Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Has this story evolved overnight? And if so, in what way? Simon, morning.
Well, I think, Nick, good morning to you. I think the biggest question is, what is Donald Trump going to do now about his sudden conclusion that, in his words, Vladimir Putin is absolutely crazy? As you heard there, he is indicating that he thinks in some fashion the Russian leader has changed his behavior. I don't know what's happened to him, he said. Something has happened to Putin. The reality, of course, is that Vladimir Putin is doing what he has always done, playing Donald Trump for time in the US president's efforts to try and broker a 30-day ceasefire, and over the weekend unleashing the largest volley yet of Russian missile-tipped drone attacks on Kyiv and other population centers in Ukraine, which is a message from the Kremlin that is clear as a bell to Washington, D.C., that Vladimir Putin sees no reason whatsoever to de-escalate. Now, President Trump has hinted in the past, several times over the last few weeks, that he might implement a fresh package of sanctions against Russia, but at various points has said he doesn't want to do it because it would cripple the Russian economy. But now, in this newfound mood of anger, which, as you said, the Kremlin is dismissing as emotion on the brow of the American president, there is pressure mounting on him from Congress, where some of his fellow Republicans are preparing a new package of sanctions that, if they pass through the House and the Senate, could end up on the president's desk. And then he'd face a real choice. Does he sign them into law or give Vladimir Putin yet another chance?
Question, you've been chronicling events for the last 5 months or so since Trump returned to the White House. Can you gauge the level of frustration he has towards Putin and Russia right now, Simon?
I think it's actually quite difficult to gauge that, Nick. I mean, certainly he sounds much more frustrated with the Russian leader than ever. But at the same time, he also, in separate comments, continues to articulate a vision in which the United States and Russia will engage in what he describes as a geopolitical and economic partnership. Now, that cannot happen for as long as the war in Ukraine is taking place. And this sort of opaque nature about Donald Trump's ongoing view of Vladimir Putin is a huge challenge for our prime minister, for European leaders who are trying to maintain solidarity with the United States over Ukraine, but find themselves doing that on ever-shifting Donald Trump sands.
Simon, I've got to note that I'm going to see you at 10 o'clock this morning. Have they put Concorde back into service, or are you coming here via Star Trek?
Actually, it's
10 o'clock tonight. I'm so sorry.
10 o'clock tonight.
I've misread that. So you're in London, are you?
I am in London.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed you, sports, but you're on LBC from 10 o'clock tonight.
10 o'clock tonight and Wednesday and Thursday.
Look forward to it. Well done, Simon. We'll talk again soon about Washington Affairs. Sorry I misread that. 10 o'clock tonight, Simon Marks, 7:28 right now. And we come back to events in the United Kingdom. We go to Liverpool, the tragedy that's played out. Although, as I say at the moment, although there are serious, very serious, life-threatening injuries at the moment, unbelievably, we're not looking at any fatalities out of Liverpool. Ernie's in Watford. Ernie, what do you want to say? Were you up there? Good morning.
No, Nick, I wasn't. I was obviously watching the celebrations on TV.
Right.
And, looking at the broad... My observations of it were that, you know, looking at the... You must look at the broader picture. And the broader picture showed me that the environment, as soon as the flares that were being thrown around, was a very, very dangerous environment, you know, for the public, an area where the public are. I just felt that straight away that that wasn't for me. I mean, if I'd have been there with my children, as soon as them flares started to be thrown around, I would have walked away with my children straight away.
Well, the trouble is sometimes you're so densely packed you might not be able to walk away. If you're at the front of the crowd, you're probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 deep. It's not easy to walk away, Ernie.
Well, I would still walk away. I'd try and find a way of walking away with my children. What I saw with the amount of flares that were being thrown, I mean, did the visibility, the visibility was poor, I thought.
Yeah, I think if you look at the video, and I'm not urging you to because it's very distressing, but if you see the video, there are no flares involved at all in where this vehicle is being driven. So, you know, let's make that plain. And indeed, it's a little way away from the main parade area as we know it. So this was just wanton, reckless, irresponsible criminal driving by someone whose vision is not in any way paired with flares. But I hear what you're saying. Yeah, these big crowds, it can get a little bit testy, which is why they need to be so careful. Ernie, thank you for your input on that. Coming up after the news,
Britain surges to the top of a new European ranking of working from home, plus new warnings over tax hikes and food price inflation is back. I'm Christian May from City AM. I'll be discussing these stories with Nick shortly.
Plus, what did an apprenticeship ever do for you? Can you tell me that the job, the career you have now, is as a result of being an apprentice engineer, carpenter, whatever it might have been, hairdresser? We'll be hearing from the education sector about the joy and importance of apprenticeships later in this hour. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara in LBC, and it's the news headlines from Thomas Watts.
Four children are among 27 people in hospital after a car was driven into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade. The driver of the people carrier, a 53-year-old white British man, has been arrested. Tens of thousands of apprenticeships and training opportunities have been promised by the government. There'll be a shift in funding from higher-level courses to entry-level training for under-21s in England. The King is set to give the address at the state opening of the Canadian Parliament later. Charles's speech will set out the government's legislative agenda as Ottawa faces US threats to its economy and sovereignty. LBC weather, cloud and rain across England and Wales, some sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't diva, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver and Daddy helped me make
it. At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Here, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, back to events in Liverpool. I should have said right at the top, by the way, of course, if you were there, and there were hundreds of thousands of you who were, if you were there and you were close to the action, even if you weren't, also picking up that there were terrible problems getting away from the city, not just because, obviously, of traffic, but also it would appear, again, looking online, that the local railway company haven't covered themselves with glory, and there were massive queues at Liverpool Lime Street as people tried to get away. Now, whether that was made worse, exacerbated because of the issue, I don't know. But if you were caught up in the aftermath, you were trying to get a train, possibly a coach, or you were there or trying to drive away, do give me a call. I'd love to have your stories on that. Nothing, of course, gets near the importance of these people who reportedly, a couple of whom are fighting for their lives, so we wish them well. Now into the world of finance. Let's look at some of the front pages of the business papers. Start with City AM. New warning over stealth £9 billion tax raid. A bit of a political row going on. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, explains the background to his splash, his front page story. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yeah, I'm sorry to jump out of the bank holiday and into the world of fiscal drag, which is not where anybody wants to be, but that refers to the number of people who were pulled up into higher rates of income tax simply because those tax bands, those thresholds, don't adjust with inflation. It's been a persistent problem in the UK economy. It's one of the reasons why we have such high rates of tax, or why people feel in particular there are such high rates of tax. Now, the Liberal Democrats have put out some research we've had sight of that say that about 2 million people will see their salaries dragged up into higher tax brackets by the end of this decade, which could bring in about another £9 billion for the Treasury. So you can see the appeal from the perspective of the Chancellor. Now, Rachel Reeves said that she would end the freezing of the thresholds by 2028. They were imposed by the previous Tory government. I have to say, I'd be surprised if she follows through with that promise. She might hope we have short memories. Given the debate around the extent to which the government is now rowing back on welfare reform, trying to find billions here and there on Winterfuel and on the two-child benefit cap, she's going to be looking to pull some tax levers. This might be an obvious one.
Let's stay with your front page. Now, problems with food prices. Why might they, to use your expression, why might they spike? Why might they go up?
Yeah, the cost of food rose by an average of 2.8% on the year in May. That is up from the 2.6% cost increase in April. That's from data from the British Retail Consortium today. They blame a number of things, including a new packaging and recycling tax, the cost of which will be borne by manufacturers, and that will be passed on to consumers and retailers, and also the additional costs in a sector which is very headcount heavy, if you like. So if you consider the minimum wage hikes and burdens around the employment rights legislation working its way through Parliament, those costs are being passed on. That feeds into overall inflation, which, as we discussed last week, is a little stickier than people would like. So it absolutely plays its part in informing central bank policy and government policy over the months ahead.
Another financial headline, Trump agreeing to extend EU trade talks. Why, and what's the background to that, do we believe?
I tell you, if I was managing anybody's money, and I'm barely managing my own, I would keep a very close eye on Trump's Truth Social network, because that is where he tends to announce pretty big swings. Traders across the world now are going to have Bloomberg terminals, they're going to have the City AM app, obviously, and they're going to have Trump's social media feed. He initially said that he'll have a 20% tariff on all EU goods. Then he cut it down to 10% as part of negotiations. And on Friday, he lost patience with those negotiations and said, you know what, it's 50%, which obviously sent European and indeed American markets into a bit of a spin. He said yesterday, again on his own social media platform, that he'd had a tremendous call with Ursula von der Leyen, and that it was in fact his privilege to now delay that 50% through to July while negotiations continue. So complete yo-yoing on tariffs here. This negotiating tactic might turn out to be something of the boy who cried wolf. But as it stands, the European Union is determined to try to negotiate its way back down to slightly more palatable levels of tariffs.
Some research has been done into which countries are going back to work and which countries are doing more work from home. How does Britain fare?
Well, we should pat ourselves on the back. I suppose it's nice to top the rankings for something. Out of 40 countries surveyed by studied by King's College London, only Canada comes in with a higher average rate of working from home in a given week. The UK comes in number two globally, average of 1.8 days working from home. I have to say, the data is interesting because it's clearly now not just a post-pandemic global norm. They don't really do it in France, about one day a week. They don't do it in South Korea. They don't like it at all in Greece. So it is not something that is common across all economies these days. It seems to be that, along with Canada, the UK has chosen a new route with a higher emphasis on hybrid, or that awful word I hear sometimes, hybridity, in our working habits. So, we are second only to Canada, and we're certainly way out ahead at the top of the European rankings for the number of days Brits typically work from home.
Christian, thank you. Christian May, your editor-in-chief at City AM, finishing with that story, the research they've done. It's worth pointing out, as Christian did, most of the Asian countries, of course, not enjoying the amount of time off that we do here in the UK. We'll come back to you, our reactions concerning what went on in Liverpool, and obviously any updates with police. The questioning, I imagine, will begin. And, of course, then they have to piece together exactly how he got into what was meant to be a cordoned-off area. But there are events elsewhere. And the extraordinary scene now with Emmanuel Macron insisting he and his wife Brigitte were sharing a moment of togetherness when she appeared to slap him or shove him or push him in the face upon their aircraft landing in Vietnam on an official visit yesterday. Subsequently, French President Macron said...
We were squabbling and I was joking with my wife, and I'm surprised by it. And it becomes some sort of geoplanetary catastrophe. Everybody needs to calm down and should really focus on actual news.
Playful squabbling? Let's turn to Peter Allen, LBC's reporter in Paris. What are the Parisian, what are the French newspapers and media sources saying about this, Peter? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Lots of scrutiny of this extraordinary incident, literally one that should have taken place behind closed doors. Mm. The doors of the French presidential jet opened just a little bit early for the Macrons after they touched down in Hanoi, Vietnam, on Sunday night, and there was the Premier Dam whacking the chef d'etat around the face. It's not the kind of incident that you would normally associate with the decorum of the institution of the French presidency. They're not meant to act like that. Ashen-faced Emmanuel Macron has been all over the French media since yesterday, talking about this alarming incident, trying to play it down, saying that it was a harmless squabble, horsing around, all about affection and love. Everybody needs to calm down and focus on the real news. Well, that's exactly what he's not doing. He's putting forward lots of theories of his own. Artificial intelligence was the first one, that the video had been manipulated. He said a couple of weeks ago was also manipulated of him sharing a bag of cocaine with Keir Starmer and the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz. This time, he's finally admitted that the latest video wasn't manipulated. And, of course, the person we haven't heard from, Nick, is dear old Brigitte Macron herself. She's spoken about their strange personal life. It's been called strange quite a few times in the past because they met...
She's in training for the fight against Tyson Fury. We've got to remember that. She probably can't come out of training camp.
I think she packs a punch, yes, certainly.
An unusual relationship, of course. There's a bit of an age gap in how they met. Just remind the listeners of that, Peter.
Yes, they met when Emmanuel Macron was 15. He was her drama school pupil in Amiens, northern France. And the relationship blossomed were there while they were, well, they were both at school, literally both at school. Mm. She was a married mother of three at the time. And lots of eyebrows raised, as we say, over the years early on in the relationship. They finally got married. She divorced her first husband. And again, there's this 25-year age gap. She's 72 now. He's 47. And this incident has clearly increased the speculation.
Peter, you know journalism, both sides of La Manche, both sides of the Channel. You can imagine how British newspapers are going. Are there greater restrictions on the French press and what it can do?
Not so much now. There were, let's say 10, 15 years ago, it would have been very hard to even speculate about an incident like this because it's the President of France. Again, lots of decorum around the institution of the French presidency. But gloves are really off now, to use use that expression, which is probably right here. And there's lots of speculation, I have to say, about it all now. And I think it will continue until we hear from Brigitte Macron and hear what she's got to say about it all.
I think you're right. She needs to nail this one, doesn't she? Peter Allen, thank you. LBC's reporter in Paris reporting, 7:42. Now, I asked if any of you were at the parade. I'm very grateful to Luke in Birmingham. Luke, thank you for coming on. I imagine you're a Liverpool fan and you went up. Is that right? Good morning.
Yeah. Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right, sport. How about you? How close were you to it, or were you quite a ways away?
I was very close to it, actually, in the adjacent street. So I was Brunswick Street, if you know Liverpool, but right on the Strand there. So
I know the Strand. Yep.
To be honest with you, I wasn't aware the actual issue took place until about 4 hours after, because of the signal issues. As you can imagine, there's so many people there, a congregation of people.
Did they ever put an idea how many folk turned out? Do we have a rough estimate how many people were in Liverpool yesterday, Luke?
I believe it was about three quarters to a million people.
Up to a million people. Okay.
Yeah.
Until it went wrong, and obviously you say you weren't aware because you were a street or so away. How well organised was it, would you say?
I'd say the police did a really good job. So they were blocking up, I guess, to use Andy's previous caller, they were using the hard barriers to block up so there wasn't a backup of people on James Street or Brunswick Street. And I guess the reason for my call in is there was a natural congregation of people from the Strand side into the centre of town. So you know that people are moving from that side into the centre of town to Lime Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was on the adjacent street, as I mentioned before. I hadn't seen a single car driven up until probably about a kilometre away. I only saw cars which were on the roads about up to Lime Street or near the bus stop there. So I was so surprised I'd seen the video and it's awful. But I guess the secondary thoughts were, how has a car got to that sort of level or that close to the parade itself? Further down that street, it would have no chance of pulling left or right because it was already cordoned off. So I guess there's obviously a lot of questions to be asked of the police as to how it even got there. Because, the whole place should have been cordoned off because the police would have known everyone's moving to the centre of town.
And I would imagine, you'll know better than I, it's probably an area that's going to have a lot of CCTV, so the police are going to be able to track this vehicle's moments as and when the man, if it's true, he leaves the bar and he walks to the car, they'll be able to pick him up on their cameras and see what he does next, I guess.
I'm sure.
Lastly, getting out of the city, you went up by car, I understand, but apparently train travel was very difficult. What was it like getting out?
Well, I'm originally from Chester, but I got a train in. That was absolutely fine. And I was queuing in Lime Street for about 3 hours.
Oh, I thought you drove up. I've read about this. They were sort of handing babies over crash barriers because children were getting so panicked. Did you witness some of that?
It was dreadful. There was a lot of issues because there was no sort of communication either to the crowd. I know there was police sergeants just stood up, and I didn't know if there's anything to do with the actual event that took place earlier, but the whole of Lime Street was closed off. Like, people were outside it. Nobody could even go into the station itself. I was told there's a five-hour wait. I even went to Liverpool Central to try and get a metro back to Chester. That was a five-hour wait as well. It was absolute pandemonium. I had to call the mother to quickly, make my escape from Costco car park.
So, goodness.
It was an absolute nightmare. I'd have been stuffed without her, to be fair. So,
well done to her. I hope you got as much out of there. Congratulations, obviously, on the team you support, but obviously it will forever be coloured by these horrific events. Luke, thanks for calling and have a good day at work, whatever you're doing. So these reports are, I'm afraid, the train company appear to have completely botched it. But if you're dealing with three quarters of a million or a million people, many of whom, let's be honest, they're going to have a beer or a glass of wine, so they're not going to take their vehicles, you've got to be ready to handle it, don't you? We'll return to that subject, but coming up later in the show,
Nigel Farage will pledge to scrap the two-child benefit cap and look at tax breaks for married couples in a bid to take on Labour. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with a look ahead at Reform's big speech today.
And talking of Labour, the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, is going to join us right after this to talk about the benefits of apprenticeships. It is now 7:46. LBC News headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Dozens of people are being treated after a car was driven into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Apprenticeship funding is to be shifted away from high-level courses to focus on training at lower levels, and doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action over their latest pay offer. LBC weather, cloud and rain in England and Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland seeing sunny spells and showers, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise to the QE2 bridge. It's because a lorry has broken down and there are delays from before Junction 30 at the A13. Also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues at Junction 24 at Porter's Bar, and that's where a lorry broke down earlier. That's been recovered, but the delays go all the way back to 26 at Waltham Abbey. In Kent on the M20, there are westbound delays of about half an hour to Junction 8 at Leeds Castle, and that was after a lorry broke down earlier. On the trains, London Overground's Weaver line remains suspended between Edmonton Green and Enfield Town. And also on the trains, Great Western Railway services are delayed between Redhill and Guildford following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app or buy in your nearest store.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
The McSpicy Frank's Red Hot is back. It's the McSpicy, but hotter. With 100% chicken breast fillet, melty cheese, fiery jalapenos, and the irresistible Frank's Red Hot mayo. Danger, danger. Make it hot. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only. Subject to availability.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous.
High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8, so we come out of a bank holiday weekend, and we're very much in the exam cycle now, aren't we, for most of our youngsters, either they're taking their GCSE or their A-levels or some, of course, the baccalaureate. And as I always say, give them a little bit of extra time, a little bit of patience. There's a lot of pressure. But then as and when the results come in, what should they do after that? Should they go to university, to a college, or should they look at apprenticeships? Well, the government is keen now to put more money and to create more apprenticeships in certain areas and training opportunities. Here with more details is Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson, joining us from her constituency in Sunderland. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it you're announcing today? Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick. We are announcing more opportunities for young people so that they have the chance to get on in fantastic trades like construction. I'm speaking to you today from an independent training provider in Sunderland that do amazing work to support young people.
Well, I can see behind you. I mean, you could make a spice rack with the kit that's arranged behind you. It's extraordinary, Bridget Phillips. So where are you? Is that planks of wood and everything else behind you?
I'm at a construction academy run by Learning Curve Group. I think I'll leave it to others. It's not my skill set, I'm afraid. But okay. But I think it demonstrates the great opportunities that are out there for our young people. We're also making sure that there are more foundation apprenticeships for young people in areas like construction, so they get a taster of bricklaying, carpentry, plastering, before they then go on to specialise, because it's a big leap for young people. They leave school, they're perhaps a bit uncertain about what the future holds. But my message to young people is that we will provide the opportunities for you to get on in fantastic careers like construction and engineering, but it's for young people to seize those opportunities as well.
How long are some of these apprenticeships?
So a full apprenticeship can be up to a year, but the foundation apprenticeships are a shorter route. That means that young people get a bit more of a taste of what the industry will hold, a bit more experience before they then go on to make a final decision. But it also makes sure that, particularly for some young people that might have found school harder or might have had other challenges in their lives, they're better supported, they get that taster, and then they're able to move on to a full apprenticeship. And I've met with, lots of apprentices in my time as Education Secretary, recently meeting with some bricklaying apprentices who were so hopeful and optimistic about the future. I'd had such fantastic experience, were thinking about maybe starting their own businesses at some point in the future. I want that for more young people, because we know that we've got a really big challenge where it comes to 1 in 8 young people who are not on employment, education or training. And Roots into Construction, as one example, is a fantastic way we'll make sure that young people can get on into brilliant careers.
How confident are you that once they've done their apprenticeship in bricklaying, carpentry, whatever, there are jobs for them as they come out of their apprenticeship, Secretary of State?
There are definitely jobs there, and there'll be even more jobs in the years to come, because as a government, we want to build 1.5 million new homes. So this is an opportunity not just to create the homes that our country needs and be part of that national effort to build more homes, but it's also the chance to have a fantastic career. And I want young people to have a range of opportunities. You said at the start about young people taking exams, wondering what the future holds. It's about having a range of different routes for young people, whether that's into apprenticeships, college or university. I want young people to be able to choose what's best for them. But absolutely, it's time we took skills far more seriously as a country. Under the last government, a big drop off in the number of apprenticeship starts for young people in particular. And that's why we're rebalancing the system with much more of a focus on young people. And that does mean taking decisions around not funding in the same way some of those level 7, those master's level qualifications, those apprenticeships, and actually tilting it back to serve young people in a much better way.
Secretary of State, you've mentioned young people 2 or 3 occasions there. Just to move you a little bit away from the area we're exploring, it is reported that pressure is mounting on the Prime Minister to scrap the 2-child benefit limit. Is that a move you would support?
Well, it wasn't something that we introduced as a government. It was something the Conservatives introduced, and we are looking at it. We're looking at all measures that we can use to bring down child poverty, including social security. And the reason that we set up the Child Poverty Task Force, why the Prime Minister set it up, I co-chair it with the Work and Pension Secretary, is because this Labour government is determined to bring down the numbers of children growing up in poverty. It's why I came into politics. It's what I believe passionately. I know that too many children in our country are scarred by child poverty, including here in Sunderland. It damages their life chances. But it's not just about those individual children, important though they are. It's terrible for all of us. It's terrible for our society. It damages us all. And this Labour government will make different choices about how we back families, how we back children. We've already started some of that. There's more to do. We're expanding childcare. We're investing in new free breakfast clubs. We're increasing the minimum wage. We're going to cut the cost of school uniform to parents. That's about putting money back into parents' pockets so that they can make choices about how they support their families.
But this is with a background, of course, of cuts in certain areas of benefits, Secretary of State. Isn't that right, from this government?
Well, we've got to reform the social security system because we know it's not working. We've ended up in a situation where too many people have been left out of work for too long without the support that they need to get back into employment. That's true for our young people. It's true for adults as well. And we know the longer we let it drift, the harder it is to get people back into work. So we do need to reform the social security system. We do need to make changes around skills, which we're doing, to make it easier for people to get back into work. And that's backed up by money that was announced as part of that reform. But of course, whenever you talk about child poverty, you talk about every aspect of how you can bring those numbers down. And that is about the system of support in place for families. But it's about more than that too. And it's always been the moral mission of Labour governments to bring down child poverty, because I don't believe that where you're from should determine what you can go on to achieve in life. But still too often in modern Britain, where you're from does determine what you go on to achieve. And I don't believe that background should be destiny. I think hard work, determination, that should be what it's about. Going as far as your talents will take you, not being held back by the town that you're from or the family that you're born into. That's what we are determined to turn around.
So to the commentators and snipers who are saying that this is driven by Nigel Farage and some of his policies to try and attract Red Wall or Labour voters, how would you respond?
But Nigel Farage has never been on the side of working people. He opposes the measures that we are introducing that will help working people. For example, our employment rights bill that will give more people rights at work.
He doesn't agree with the 2-child benefit cap, Secretary of State.
Well, he flip-flops on all of this. He's backed it in the past. And
doesn't your government flip-flop a bit?
They're not serious people. He's not on the side of working people. He doesn't back the NHS in its current form. Under reform, you would end up in a situation with the NHS not existing in the way that we know it today. And that is so critical to working people. They oppose employment rights. The only plan that they've got around education is to reintroduce tax breaks for private schools, something that would have a seriously damaging impact on our ability to deliver free breakfast clubs that will benefit families the length and breadth of this country.
Let's move to education matters. Members of of the National Education Union, the largest union, of course, vote on taking strike action if you, the government, sticks with its 2.8% pay offer. How nervous are you that we could be in line for some industrial action from our teachers?
Well, just last week, we accepted the recommendation of the independent peer review body that will involve a 4% pay rise for teachers, which I think is a representation of how we really value the work of our teachers. They are the single factor that will deliver better education for our children. Having a brilliant, well-qualified, well-supported teacher at the front of the classroom is absolutely essential. But, you know, given all of the disruption that we've seen in recent years to children's education, I think the last thing we want is industrial action. We are investing in our schools. We're investing in our teachers. We are giving teachers a pay rise. And I would hope the trade unions would recognise that.
How confident are you of that?
I'm confident that they will recognise that this is a good deal for teachers. This is a 4% pay rise, 3% of which is funded. We are asking schools to make efficiencies to get that extra 1%, which I do believe they can achieve through areas like better electricity buying that we're supporting them with, bringing down some of those costs that schools are facing at the minute. But, you know, in the current context, I think it's a good pay award for teachers, and it demonstrates how seriously we want to back teachers, because it's through backing teachers that we'll get better life chances and a better education.
I wonder how much electricity you could buy with £500,000. That's what Britain's highest paid academy trust head is earning. Sir Dan Moynihan, who is at the Chief Executive of the Harris Federation. Is a post such as that worth £500,000 per annum, Secretary of State?
My view has been that it's not really for Secretaries of State to comment on individual pay arrangements of Chief Executives and of others. They have responsibilities through their governing body, through their trust.
You're relaxed about that sort of income, are you, Secretary of State?
It's a big salary, I'll give you that, but it's for individual trusts to make a determination as to whether they think that's a good level of pay. And they have to justify, obviously, to the public, to parents, but also to their board, how that represents good value for money.
I'm going to talk football matters in a moment. So first, let's start with the more celebratory one. Congratulations, your team, I understand, won its playoff. So you'll be very pleased for the constituents. Well done to Sunderland. Congratulations on that. I'm sure you gladdened your heart on the weekend. But I have to have a word with you, if I can, on the events that we witnessed in Liverpool. Is there any move forward? Do we know any more? Secretary of State.
As the Prime Minister said yesterday, our thoughts are with all of those affected following those terrible scenes. As you say, it should have been a day of real joy and celebration for people across Liverpool, and instead we've seen the day ending in utter tragedy. I want to pay tribute to our remarkable emergency services, to the first responders on the scene, and to the police, who will now be carrying out their investigation, and they will have our full support in doing so. And the community is really pulled together, and I also want to pay tribute to the community who have demonstrated enormous bravery and courage in the face of those appalling scenes, but especially those who responded so rapidly to make sure that treatment and support was available for those affected. And my thoughts are with them, and I hope, you know, we see news soon about many people making full recovery.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time talking about apprenticeships and joining us from that workshop. I'm surprised you haven't had to wear a hard hat. I'm just looking at the background. There's every bit of kit imaginable. Take care up there, Bridget Phillipson. Thank you, Secretary of State for Education, talking about the launch of apprenticeships. And I'll be asking you later in the show, actually later in the show, I do apologise, if you had an apprenticeship, whatever it might be, carpentry, bricklaying, as the Secretary of State was saying, did it give you the career that you've now done? Jolly well, you might even move towards retirement, Tim. We'll be looking at it later in the hour. We've got 1 minute after eight. Let's get the headlines on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, dozens of people have been hurt after a car ploughed into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. 27 people are being treated in hospital, including an adult and a child who were seriously injured. It's not being treated as terror-related. LBC's reporter Liam Gotting is at the scene.
Well, the chaos and carnage of what happened last night is still evident here on Water Street this morning. Broken glass, beer bottles, abandoned bikes and e-scooters all scattered in the road in front of me. Officers are lined up and down the street from top to bottom, and a huge blue and white forensics tent sits in the middle of the road as police continue their investigation. We spoke to Les, who was on Water Street and saw the whole thing happen. This is what he told us.
And people started panicking up the stairs where we were, trying to get the building, because we were scared. But you don't see it like it. I mean, he's just gone, foot down, he's gone.
A 53-year-old man from the Liverpool area has been arrested and is still being held by police. Liam Gotting, LBC, Liverpool.
Ministers are pressing ahead with plans to scrap public funding for the highest level apprenticeships in England. They are shifting the priority to under-21s, with a promise to create more than 120,000 training opportunities by the next election. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson's, told Nick that it's a rebalancing of the system.
It's a big leap for young people. They leave school, they're perhaps a bit uncertain about what the future holds. But my message to young people is that we will provide the opportunities for you to get on in fantastic careers like construction and engineering. But it's for young people to seize those opportunities as well.
The British Medical Association has started balloting doctors for possible industrial action. Resident, previously known as junior doctors in England, have been offered an average pay rise of 5.4% this year. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has urged them to oppose any walkouts. Nigel Farage will accuse Keir Starmer of being hopelessly out of touch with working people in a speech later. He'll also confirm Reform's commitment to scrap the two-child benefit cap and reinstate winter fuel payments for all pensioners. The Prime Minister's already announced a partial reversal of the policy without any further detail. The King is preparing to give the address at the state opening of Parliament in Canada. He will become only the second British monarch to do so after the late Queen in 1957. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 87.12. It closed down 29 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.19. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales. Sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Barclays Ready Made Investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays Where Do I Begin Investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after eight, Tuesday, May the 27th. Another day, another U-turn possibly on disability benefits. We've also already seen winter fuel, two-child benefits. We'll get all the details and then, more importantly, of course, ask you for your input on that later in this hour. Israeli airstrikes in Gaza killed 52, 36 in a school turned shelter. Pascal Quazard is an emergency coordinator of the charity Doctors Without Borders.
Here we are again with displacement orders. Here we are again with people fearing for their lives overnight. They're mourning so many more people than at the beginning of the war.
If you're an apprentice, what did it ever do for you? Do you owe your job, your career? Do you own the business you built up because you started out as a bricklayer, a carpenter, a sparks, an electrician, whatever it might be? Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson, just in the last hour, was extolling the virtues.
But my message to young people is that we will provide the opportunities for you to get on in fantastic careers like construction and engineering, but it's for young people to seize those opportunities as well.
We will, of course, return to that dark story in Liverpool if any more details emerge and continue to try and work out what went so catastrophically wrong. We also return to events last week at the White House.
Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know.
I think you've made your point, President Trump, but you're no stranger to hyperbole. So what is the truth as he confronted South African President Cyril Ramaphosa with death, death, horrible death? What is the true picture of the plight of white farmers in South Africa?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Great excitement with commentators and journalists alike. I don't know what you would call the collective noun for U-turns. Would it be a confusion, a puzzle, a bewilderment of U-turns? But are there some more? Is there another one on the way? LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, is in the studio with all the details. Natasha, good morning.
Yes, good morning. And of course, the government, we talked about this last week, the two-child benefit cap being on the table, and something that the government are very, very keen to look at in the light of the fact that they are facing a huge rebellion on benefits. And I went to a speech by Liz Kendall, the Work and Pension Secretary, last week, where she was very clear this upcoming child poverty strategy that the government have now delayed into the autumn is very much on the table. That is something that they want to have a look at to try and put off this benefits row. And meanwhile, Nigel Farage, the Reform Party leader, parking his tanks firmly on Labour's lawn today. So the Reform leader is going to accuse Keir Starmer of being hopelessly out of touch with working people. I'm told it's going to be one of his most blistering attacks on the Prime Minister yet. He's going to dub him the most unpatriotic in history after signing those deals that we saw last week, handing the Chagos Islands over to Mauritius, and of course that deal with the EU too. I'm told that he's going to say that only he can represent the working class. He'll say, what does Keir Starmer know about people getting up at 5 a.m. to go to work, pay their taxes and still not have enough to pay the bills while a family next door doesn't work and has more money in their pocket? This is not right or fair. So he's going to promise three big things. First, to scrap the two-child benefit cap. That's already hated by many Labour MPs, and that's something that there is potentially a U-turn on the cards on, I was told last week. Secondly, to promise to reinstate those winter fuel payments for pensioners. That's what Keir Starmer U-turned on last week. We don't have the details on that. I am told those details, Nick, not coming until the budget later this year, so we are going to be waiting a very, very long time for that, which makes no sense to me. I'm not sure why you would announce a U-turn without announcing when it's going to happen. And I mean, means that for many pensioners, it's not going to come in time for this winter either. And third, an interesting idea from Nigel Farage today, tax breaks for married couples. He wants people to be encouraged to stay married and to have children. He believes that declining birth rate is something that politicians need to be tackling. And this is Nigel Farage's first major speech since winning that Runcorn by-election just a few weeks ago by just 6 votes. And speaking with LBC, just minutes after that win, Mr Farage said working people were growing more frustrated with this Labour government.
Crucially, the things that switched a lot of old Labour voters to us in this constituency, number one, working people. They have alarms that go off in the morning. They cross the bridge and work in Merseyside. Mostly, the taxes they pay are going up and they wonder why they're doing it. Secondly, a feeling that somehow Labour is not a patriotic party. And thirdly, there are 750 young men who've crossed the English Channel living in this constituency at the expense of hard-working taxpayers, causing great alarm in many streets.
But speaking with you earlier today, the Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson accused him of having no idea what really working-class people wanted in this country.
But Nigel Farage has never been on the side of working people. He opposes the measures that we are introducing that will help working people. For example, our Employment Rights Bill that will give more people rights at work.
He doesn't agree with the two-child benefit cap, Secretary of State.
Well, he flip-flops on all of this. He's backed it in the past. And
doesn't your government flip-flop a bit?
They're not serious people. He's not on the side of working people. He doesn't back the NHS in its current form. Under reform, you would end up in a situation with the NHS not existing in the way that we know it today. And that is so critical to working people. They oppose employment rights. The only plan that they've got around education is to reintroduce tax breaks for private schools, something that would have a seriously damaging impact on our ability to deliver free breakfast clubs that will benefit families the length and breadth of this country.
So recent polling from YouGov, Nick, has put the party on 29%. That's the Reform Party, followed by Labour on 22%. It's clear that despite
the
government...
Tories
are on 16%, exactly. So, you know, they consider themselves to be the opposition now, Reform do. So this is going to be their first attempt to try and actually put themselves on a policy platform. But of course, they're going to face questions. How are you going to pay for it? This is the kind of thing that's cost billions and billions of pounds. And people, you know, call Nigel Farage a snake oil salesman because he doesn't have the plan to pay for it and actually say where on earth this money is going to come from. But with them doing so well in the polls, it's just going to put the pressure on them to actually say what they're going to do if they actually do get into government.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. We'll hear more about the impact with someone from Trussell Food Bank in just a moment. First, let's go to James Mathewson, who was a spokesperson with the Labour Party, joins me now. The point that Natasha made, we're looking at possible three changes, one of which is a winter fuel payment, but we won't tell you more for a couple of months. This doesn't seem particularly clever stewardship, in my view. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. You're absolutely right. It's not clever. The thing is, if you're going to U-turn, you U-turn, you know? Mm. I mean, to kind of drive the metaphor a bit further forward, you know, you don't wait till the last minute, do
no.
you? You don't
if wait we were going the wrong way up the M1, I'm going to turn around at Watford, not keep talking to you about it at Leicester and Sheffield. This is the reality,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly, that's the situation. I think people see this for what it is. It's that there's been an error. Labour's drifted away from its values in an attempt to try and appease or deal with the reform issue. Reform have totally pulled a blinder on them, to be honest, and said, oh, well, actually, on some stuff, we're going to be more left-wing than you. You know, when it comes to economics and some of the economic issues, we're going to pivot to the left because some working class communities want to see that in the north. And they've totally been blindsided by it, and now they're trying to scuttle back and do this U-turn. But unless they show that they got it wrong and actually hold their hands up and say, look, this wasn't right, we're undoing it because of that, not just because of our electoral chances, then it's going to look entirely disingenuous, I think, and people will see through it.
James, there's no measure for this, but how rattled do you think in some areas Labour is or Labour are by Nigel Farage?
More than they need to be, you know, and this is the thing, right? Because yes, that polling's scary, yes, of course it is, but if you have your values and you stand on them and you stand a particular place, people are drawn to confidence, Nick. They like people who know what they stand for and represent. You look around British politics at the moment, exactly what you are. I don't know what you mean or what you represent. I don't know what that is. And somebody without values or without a particular, you know, anyone who looks like they're a weather vane or go in any direction is not installing confidence in anybody, really.
James, I will leave it there. Line's starting to break up. Thanks for your time, James. James Mathewson was a spokesperson of the Labour Party for 14 after 8. Listening, Helen Barnard, who's Director of Policy at Trussell, of course, the charity working to end the need for food banks in the UK. What policies do you, the work that you and your colleagues so tirelessly do, what policies would you want to hear in this area? Good morning to you.
Good morning. So the three things that we really want to see are, first of all, calling a halt to the planned disability cuts, because about three quarters of the people who come to food banks are disabled themselves or live with someone who is. And there is genuine fear out there among food banks and disabled people about what will happen if they get this the lifelines of the disability benefits pulled away. The second is looking at universal credit, because what's happened is there's no link in the system between how much universal credit you get and how much kind of basic essentials cost. And so it's kind of fallen to such a low level that we see people that even when we give them the advice about how to manage debt, how to get the benefits, how to deal with your housing, they still can't cover their costs. And the third, as you've been discussing, is lifting that two-child limit, which is the single most cost-effective way to lift hundreds of thousands of children out of really severe hardship and give them just a fair start in life.
Do you not think, Helen, there is some scope for reform? You'll be aware, perhaps, that there are 9 million people deemed economically inactive in the United Kingdom, 6.4 million of whom are on some kind of benefits. Is that not an area that, in some part, is detracting from those in genuine need?
Oh, we are absolutely in favour of reform. I don't know anybody who thinks the current system around disability benefits and employment is working the way it should be. I think, though, we need to be careful not to conflate cuts with reform. So if you look at what the Department for Work and Pensions was doing, they were coming up with some really positive, thoughtful ideas about how to get employment support working for disabled people, how to make it easier for disabled people to try out work, working with employers, because one of the big problems if you're disabled is finding a job locally that you can do alongside your health condition. All of that is great. The trouble is we then had the Treasury kind of driving a coach and horses through it, saying, no, we just need to get short-term savings. And what we see is that when you reduce people's incomes by that much, it actually pushes them further away from the labour market. Because if you're not eating properly, if you're in a cold, damp house, if you can't afford the bus fare to get to either a job interview or your hospital appointment, you are going to become less and less able to get out there and work. And it damages people, and that has costs for all of us.
All right. Before I let you go, Trussell, as busy as ever, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, we've just had our stats out. Last year, we provided nearly 3 million emergency food parcels. And for the third year running, it was more than 1 million for children. So we are deeply concerned about the hardship that's out there.
Helen Barnard, thank you. You're Director of Policy at Trussell. Of course, securing the food banks and the supervision of food, as you've outlined. 9 million people, supposedly economically inactive. 6.4 million on some kind of benefits. Numbers that have to be addressed. The 8:15 LBC News headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Four children are among 27 people in hospital after a car ploughed into crowds during Liverpool's Premier League victory parade. Ministers have promised 120,000 new apprenticeship and training routes for young adults in England. And the King will give the address at the state opening of the Canadian Parliament later. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales. Sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M23 southbound just after the M25 junction. It's because a car broke down and there's been a fuel spillage. Lots of problems on the M25. Clockwise, traffic is being held at junction 6 at Godstone. That's where a car's broken down. Then there are delays anti-clockwise to junction 25 at the A10 following an accident. Two of the four lanes are closed. And long delays continue on the M25 clockwise to the QE2 bridge after that lorry broke down earlier. But all the lanes are now back open. On London Overground, the Weaver line remains suspended between Edmonton Green and Enfield. And also on the trains, Great Western Railway services are delayed between Redhill and Guildford following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
In the time it takes to boil your kettle, you could find out if you can claim for a missold PCP agreement. Visit claimsforcars.com, answer a few easy questions, and you'll find out in seconds. If you financed a car between 2007 and 2021 and weren't shown different options or discussed dealer commission, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis. Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous.
High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialize in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't diver, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Whichever way you look at it, 20 minutes after 8, whichever way you look at it, it does appear that Nigel Farage is making a lot of the running, the political running. The Conservatives are way, way, way out of the game. Did you see the idea that the solution might be the return of Boris Johnson? My goodness me, if that problem is that bad, that really is something. Although there's no interest in the Conservative Party. Lib Dems are rather distant as well. So is it all Nigel Farage? John's in Maidstone. What do you say to that idea? John, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Well, I totally support Nigel. He's saying what the working man want to hear. And to
tell me the things that work. You are, I assume, I'm a working man for that matter. You are a working man, so what are you hearing that you like?
Well, I'm hearing that he's going to put our country first when he gets...
What does that mean? What does that actually mean to you when you hear a politician? Because politicians love saying that. Donald Trump said it. Probably Emmanuel Macron, if he was allowed by his wife to say it, said it. So what does it actually mean?
Well, he's going to look at, first of all, he's going to look at the tax threshold that we have to pay. It's not moved in the last two or three years. So gradually, we've all crept in, pensioners, and everybody's crept into paying more tax because I haven't raised $12,000. He's looked at, he's slaughtered the farming industry. You know, people are threatening to kill themselves before next April so they can hand their farm over to their family. And if to pay for these things, take takes Starmer's passport off him, because every time he goes abroad, he gives away our money. He gives away the money to Africa, Europe. Every time he goes on that,
the other thing last year that Mr. Farage was very strong on after the by-election victory in earlier this month, and he may well return to that today, is the fact that there are 9 million economically inactive people in Britain, 6.4 of whom are on some kind of benefits, and he will say how there is a class who set their alarm clock and it rings in the morning and they get up and they get on trains or buses or they walk and go to work. Is he on song with that message for you as well, John?
Yes, he is on song. And to help those people that want to work, let's help these small SMEs to give them tax breaks and apprentice type of support, so that if a person wants to work, whether it's 2 or 3 days a week initially to get them back into the sort of thing, there's support for them.
A lot of people would agree with that, John. I will leave it there. Listen to it on LBC, and of course the joy of this radio station is you can have your views and make your comments known immediately afterwards. Mark, you'll be the next caller on that. But to show that we are a true global show, we go elsewhere. And the horrors now of the latest Israeli airstrike, killing, it's believed, at least 52 people, including 36 in a school-turned-shelter that was hit, as reported, as people slept. It set their belongings ablaze. This comes from, of course, the local Hamas-run health authority. Moseb Elian and Farah Nazir were among those who were sheltering.
My wife, children and I were sleeping upstairs and we found everything falling on us, windows and stones. We ran out like crazy.
My little son, a year and a half old, was under the rubble. My husband was under the rubble. All our children were under the rubble.
To Riham Jafari, who's an advocacy coordinator at Action Aid Palestine, joining us from the West Bank. What do you understand, thank you for your time this morning, what do you understand to be the situation as regarding food, medical supplies in Gaza at this time? Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. The situation is more than catastrophic. We are really unable to describe the situation. We are lost of words. There is a severe shortage of food, of water, ongoing displacement and evacuation order for the peoples to evacuate and to seek a safe place, while there is no safe place or safe zone in Gaza. The blockade of aid continues since the 2nd of March. Non-stop bombing for buildings, for shelters, for tents of displaced people.
Riham, can I pick up on that? Because we understand here in the West that while the blockade has been very severe, it has in part, has partially been lifted last week. Is that true?
There, according to media resources, that Israeli and U.S. plan yesterday resumed distributing aid in a way that violates the international law. And last week, there a limited number of aid trucks that were delivered to some bakeries in the middle and the south parts of Gaza, while the north areas did not receive anything. The new mechanism and the new scheme and the new plan, which was coordinated by the Israeli and the American, is violating the international standards of humanitarian aid, including independence and transparency and neutrality. And this mechanism was refused by the UN agencies and the humanitarian organization working in Gaza, because it strengthened and it encouraged people to leave their areas and it forced their displacement. And it is not safe. It lacks security. The people and the women and the children of Gaza do not need security vetting or security check. They need to be supported and to be protected. They need the war to end, and they need urgent ceasefire.
Lastly, Riham, the way that the Israel authorities see the war ending is to seize complete control of Gaza. What would that look like, in your view, for the people there now?
So the people in Gaza want this war to end. This they want the starvation to end. They want to live a usual life. So they are under continuous bombing and displacement for more than 19 months. The people of Gaza need the world leaders, the world governments to take action, to touch concrete action on the ground, to see an end to this suffering, to this misery, to their lives. Gaza is missing everything and needs everything. They need the restriction on aid to be removed. They need medical equipment, medical stuff to enter Gaza. They need everything. They need shelters. So they need action to accompany all the words and the statement released by the governments around the world to be translated on the ground and to stop this war, to stop this suffering, to stop this catastrophe that is unprecedented. People of Gaza live under under catastrophic humanitarian conditions for more than 19 months.
I'm grateful for your time. Thank you for your input. Reham Jaffari is Advocacy Coordinator at Action Aid Palestine, based in the West Bank. We come back to events here. You may well want to call on that, of course, this idea of the aid getting in, but nothing like in the amount that it's required. And, of course, Israel not shifting from its position that it wants total domination, wants to effectively own all of Gaza. We might come back to that, but we're talking about events here. We're talking about where the Prime Minister finds himself as a result of being pushed, perhaps in some way against his will, by reform. Mark's in Camborne. Mark, what do you think? What reforms do you think? Sorry, small R reforms are needed. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I normally talk to you about Grenfell, but it's about the winter fuel payment this time. Now, I'm on the cusp. I just lost the winter fuel payment last year. Rainer, Koonsberg, Badenoch, and Farage this afternoon, we're all talking about this, restoring the pension credit, the winter fuel payment to pensioners. But none of them are mentioning pension credit. Now, I've applied four times, and you fill in a 14-page form, you wait 4 weeks, and the government has determined that last time it was 18260 a week that you go on. Because my pension is 18515, I'm no. So it's very, very simple.
What does that mean to you?
Well, it is what it is. You know, there's a threshold there. Why people are making so much fuss about it, it's very simple. And I think it was an incompetent thing brought in by Boris Johnson's regime. And that what Starmer has done is very sensible. And, of course, you know, if Farage does it, then it shows that his regime will be incompetent too. So all Starmer has to do, which is what he said the word threshold, it's raised the threshold to 200, say.
I hear what you say, but how much does that... Do we have any idea what that would cost?
No, I wouldn't... No, sorry, Nick, I don't.
That is a reality. Obviously, that makes sense, and on paper it makes sense for you, but you now apply it across the whole of the country, and you just wonder what the cost will be, lastly, Mark.
Yeah. But, I mean, surely restoring 300 a year to all pensioners is way more.
All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, there's so many, as they say, shoes to drop. We have to hear exactly what Nigel Farage says later this morning. And, of course, there'll be full coverage here on LBC. We then have to work out whether the government is actually looking at another U-turn. And, again, full coverage on that. Also, full coverage of a story. We go back in time. White House last week.
Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know.
I don't know. No stranger to confrontation, Donald Trump. This time it was the turn of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. But what is the truth behind the plight of white farmers in South Africa? That's in the next hour. It's 8:31 now. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. Let's get the headlines. Thomas Watts.
Dozens of people have been injured after a car was driven into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Some 27 people were taken to hospital, including a child and adult with serious injuries. Apprenticeship funding is to be shifted away from high-level courses to focus on training at lower levels. Ministers have promised to back the next generation by investing in more courses for under-21s in England. Doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action over their latest pay offer. Residents, previously known as junior doctors in England, have been offered an average pay rise of 5.4% this year. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales, sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Redeem all week only in the app. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8.33 is the time. Let's talk more about this because we did quite rightly cover the events in the Middle East, so we probably not looked at as much as we should at the events here in the UK. Who's been hanging on? Right, Billy, inventor on the Isle of Wight. You've been hanging on quite a while. Thank you for that, Billy. You want to talk about the Nigel Farage aspect of this. Good morning.
Hi, yeah, morning, Nick. It did raise my eyebrows a little bit, I must be honest with you. It's one thing pointing the finger and quite rightly making a number of statements about your opposition in another party, but to say that Starmer doesn't have any connection with the working people and doesn't know what it's like to get up at 5 a.m. is just, I mean, it's ludicrous at the least, but it's actually a lie, because Starmer was brought up in a working class household and he did climb his way to the top. Whether you like it or not, he does certainly know what it's like to get up and pay his taxes.
Why is he, Nigel Farage would probably argue, why is he presiding over a system where we have 6.4 million people who are on benefits out of 9 million people who can't work?
Well, see, this is where, again, the point, a stopped clock, as they say, is right twice a day. I don't disagree with the statement that you make there. You're not wrong twice a day. You're right mostly all the time.
Oh, I
love
that.
Listening in to you.
I
just want to make that absolutely clear, and I'm not just saying that to blow smoke, but clearly there is a problem with the economical situation of inactivity. I mean, we've got 9 million people out of work. The voluntary sector contributes somewhere in the region of 18% to the economy. I say we give them a bit of get up and go, and they should go out and do a bit of volunteering.
You sound a bright bloke, an open-minded bloke. If the numbers tell the truth, the working man and woman of Britain, or certainly three-quarters of the country that had... I'm so sorry, 25% of the country that had local elections, the mayoralties and the people at the by-election, they do think Keir Starmer is not on the side of the working man or woman in the way that their vote has gone to reform. That's the reality. No?
I mean, I can't change, and the figures, you're right, the figures speak for themselves. Clearly, people have decided to vote with their feet, so to speak. But what I would say is the fact that Nigel Farage was privately educated and earned somewhere in the region of £60,000 for working for that well-known news company, I think speaks for itself. You can't turn around if you're earning £60,000 a year for doing an hour on a TV show.
But the blokes in Runcorn don't make that kind of money. They are, again, to use it like, they're getting up in the morning, crossing the bridge and working on Merseyside. So they're the ones who put the Runcorn MP, the Reform MP, there for Runcorn. So surely they're agreeing more with what Nigel Farage is saying? No?
Well, it's not a matter of I don't think that they agree or disagree more with him. It's clear that they obviously do if they're voting for reform. But what they're probably missing here, and this is what I would argue, because at least the way I'm looking at it, is I'm thinking, well, hang on a second, you're behaving like a bit of a hypocrite, because you're saying that Starmer doesn't know what it's like to get up and go, and yet you get paid $60,000 a year for doing an hour on a TV show, and you get £12,000 a year, according to his latest expenses, for doing videos on Cameo. So I'm sorry, it just smells to me of hypocrisy to turn around and say that he doesn't know what it's like to work when he's from a very privileged background himself.
Billy will be listening carefully to that speech later this morning from Nigel Farage. Thanks for all the points you make, Billy. Only finishing to get more people on. Chris, you'll be the next caller, but let's get some of the social media and texts that are coming in. Anastasia wants to point out, being on universal credit as a person with a disability is not nice. I have severe cerebral palsy. The support to get suitable work is not there. Joe in Putney, what they never address about getting all of these inactive jobless people into work is that work does not pay. Pay rates are too low to cover basic costs, so people just think, why should they bother? So they stay on benefits that do cover these costs. Well, surely, Joe, that means the system has to be reworked. And there should be no ifs and buts about it. If you can afford, if you are able to work, you should, and there is a job, you should work. Alex says, it terrifies me how people are thick to believe the populist ramblings of Nigel Farage. He might actually spend some time in his constituency if we took his passport away. He has bought a home in Clacton, it has to say. The same point, how a millionaire that attended one out of 42 fishing committee meetings for which he was an NEP can convince working people he's on their side is astonishing. Well, is it perhaps the failure of the others, Alex, instead of throwing stones at others where they're failing? Chris in Irvine. Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Yes.
I believe the root cause needs looked at. Instead of just giving some pensioners some money, why don't we ask the energy firms to lower their prices?
Why?
Well,
why should it be? I mean, I'm not disputing that energy costs are very high, but why should it be down to E.ON and whoever else, Scottish Gas, to bail out the economy?
Well, Nick, 4 years ago, my electricity bill, or 5 years ago, sorry, my electricity bill was £700 cheaper. Why did it all of a sudden just go up?
Well, I don't know if it's all of a sudden. I think mine has been gradual, I suppose, in part because of Ukraine, but other measures. But it's not, the government don't set the electricity rate, of course, Chris.
Yeah, well, we were told if we left the EU, they could remove that. That was Michael Gove and Boris Johnston that says that. It never happened. They were in power.
Okay. You want to go back to those fantastic days before Brexit?
No. And one other thing I would say is Nigel didn't buy that house. His partner did.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure. I don't know who's buying which house, but Chris, thank you. Let's go to some of the social media. I honestly don't think, Chris, that really it falls to energy companies to bail out the British economy, if you think about it. Let's talk more directly how people are faring. Tony says, I work and earn £2,000 a month. My rent in the council house is £900 a month, council tax £190, shopping bill £400 a month, and then £100 for travel. But I don't work. If I don't work, I get my rent paid, tax paid, NHS dental free, travel half price, and £800 a month for free, and enjoy time with the family. So that's the reality. If Tony works, he gets £2,000 a month, pays £900 in council tax, £190 shopping, £400 a month. But if he doesn't, they pay the rent and he gets £800 a month. That is, I would argue, the system that needs to be changed. 840. Andy's in Paddington. Andy, you're on the radio. What do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm going to make a prediction for you.
Go on.
And I believe there's going to be a snap election, a vote of no confidence in this current government within the next 18 months, and I firmly believe reform
will win
hands down.
I mean, you're talking about a majority, even with the issues that he has. It's north of 150 the Prime Minister enjoys. Why on earth would he need to have a snap election?
I believe from Rachel Reeves' incompetence and stupidity in terms of what she's doing with the economy, I think there's going to be a huge recession come. Investment is low, the FTSE, there's no IPOs on the FTSE.
But
the whole country is in disaster.
But why? Okay, I don't know if that's wholly fair, but certainly some of the ingredients that you put forward seem valid. But tell me how you get to the point of him calling an election. How does that happen?
I think things are going to become economically inviable within the next 8 months, and I think it'll be so bad that...
But why would he go... If it's that bad, why on earth would a Prime Minister risk his job, and indeed why would any of the Labour MPs risk their jobs by allowing that to happen?
Well, I don't think they're... intelligent enough to realise what they're walking into. I think the whole country, the pressure on them will become that much that there will be inevitably a snap election forced upon them from the media, from the public.
Lastly, how... Bear in mind, there would have to be a vote. I just don't see that he'd ever be that weak, lastly, Andy. He's got 100... Well, he did have 172. Let's say it's 160-something now. That's unprecedented.
No? I know, but we live in a strange times, and I think I firmly believe that's going to happen.
All right. Well, 18 months, where do we start the clock? Let's say... Well, let's be generous and give you to the end of 2026. I don't think we'll be talking about that in Christmas 2026. But we'll see, Andy. Stranger things have happened. 8:42. That's not that strange, by the way. That's the time. Michael's in Muswell Hill. Michael, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, hi, Nick. You get a lot of callers ringing up saying, Nigel represents the voice of the ordinary working man. I don't know what happened to the working women, but anyway.
Well, it's just a saying. Let's be fair.
It's just a sexist saying. But anyway, I'm a working man amongst all the working people of this country. And from my perspective, Nigel Farage's main contribution to this country is costing us £100 billion in lost GDP every year.
Why is reform so popular?
Well, I think people are not making a very simple connection. You know, he stands on the sideline and throws, you know, brickbats of the current politicians. He claims he's not a politician, so he's a career politician. And his one major contribution to our economy is to lose $100 billion a year.
You said that, but I don't understand why the party is doing so well. Is the country so, you're so bright and they're so stupid? Is that the reality of it?
I think $100 billion, you know, which has got about 11 knots in it, I think, Nick. But it happens to have one.
I hear what you say. Why does his message still resonate so many voters?
I think because people do not hold him responsible. Somehow reform is a new party, actually.
But it doesn't matter whether you call it Brexit, UKIP, reform. It always does well in by-elections, and indeed in local authority elections, in UKIP's form. Always. So are you saying that these people, whether they vote Brexit, UKIP, reform, they're all wrong?
I think they do not make the connection. I mean, the OBR...
That's very dismissive,
and
isn't
they
it?
They say we're losing $100 billion a year. I mean, lifting the two-child cap is $2.5 billion. Brexit is costing us $100 billion.
Honestly,
and the current government... the current government is having to deal with that economic reality.
But the reality you... can't deal with is that for some people it works and they keep voting him or his parties or his representatives in.
I know they do.
Right.
I know they do.
His message gets through, doesn't it?
It's very easy to promise people Christmas every day, Nick. Of course it is. And that's what he does.
And the main parties, the Conservatives and Labour, they've been delivering Christmas, have they?
No, I think the current government is having to deal with the reality of what our economy is at the moment, and a significant factor in that is the fact that we're losing $100 billion.
I think that's seven times we've heard that number now. You have got the point across, but Michael, it respectfully, I think you need to go and talk to folk who are in Runcorn and other parts of the world. I hear what you say. The message works. There are concerns that reform has latched onto, that UKIP latched onto, that Brexit Party latched onto, that the main parties have utterly ignored. Does that make Nigel Farage right? Probably not. Does it make him a good human being? Possibly not. I don't know. But he's certainly more in tune. Just look at the last results. £100 million dent to the economy, I think you mentioned. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
27 people are being treated in hospital after a car ploughed into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Ministers are pressing ahead with plans to scrap funding for the highest level apprenticeships in England. And Nigel Farage will accuse the Prime Minister of being hopelessly out of touch in a speech later. LBC weather, most places seeing some cloud and rain with sunny spells in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Lots of problems on the M25. Firstly, on the northern stretch, there are anti-clockwise queues to junction 25 at the A10. It's all down to an accident. Then there are delays clockwise to junction 6 at Godson after a car broke down. And it's still very slow on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge after a lorry broke down earlier. Lengthy delays on the A13 westbound to the Pitsea flyover. And that's because some power cables have fallen into the road. On the trains, London Overground
services aren't running. This is the Weaver line between Edmonton Green and Enfield Town. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Central line and also minor delays on the Metropolitan line between Baker Street and Aldgate.
LBC.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
When you're sure you know the answer. When it's on the tip of your tongue. When you beat the buzzer and the contestant.
Get in the bag.
How did you know that?
Naturally brilliant, I guess.
Yeah, modest too.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can play along with all your favourite quiz shows. Search TV licence together.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toker Social. Take on darts, mini golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, I mean car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before 9 is the time. Coming up after 9, by the way, we heard from the Education Secretary the importance of apprenticeships. The government talking about putting in more money, creating more apprenticeship possibilities. Do you own your job now? Do you own the business you set up? Maybe you are in some form of construction or an allied trade. In electrical supplies, whatever it might be, engineering, I don't know, even do they have apprentice hairdressers? I'm sure they do. And you have a business now. What you learnt from your apprenticeships, we'll look at that. Now, that's a definite from the government. A possible is that they could scrap the two-child benefit limit. One paper, the Daily Mirror, reports that pressure is becoming almost unbearable now. Tensions, it says, are growing over the winter fuel payment and the planned disability benefit costs. Labour MP Stella Creasy urging the MP to end the two-child benefit limit, saying it would lift 350,000 children out of poverty overnight. Well, what's not to like about that? Let's turn to Conservative MP and Shadow Chancellor Mel Stride, who joins me now. You'd want to lift those 350,000 children out of poverty, I'm sure. So you would support this, Mr. Stride? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, I wouldn't support it, but I do want to get people
out. You want to keep children in poverty, Mr. Stride?
Of course not. And under the last Conservative government, we substantially reduced the number of children that were in absolute poverty after housing costs, as we did for pensioners and more broadly for the population. But the way you do it, Nick, is you generate an economy that in which real wages are rising, and you encourage and have a benefit system that means that more people are going into work and less people are being on benefits. There are two problems with what is likely to happen here in scrapping this cap. One is the sheer cost of it, which is about £3.5 billion. Now, you have to compare that to the headroom, the fiscal headroom, the sort of margin of error, if you like, that the Chancellor has against her targets, that represents about a third of that margin gone straight away. And we know that that whole fiscal headroom is under severe pressure at the moment. But the second reason is, I think, a point of fairness, that many of your listeners may have taken a decision that they go out, they work hard, they're not on benefits, and they take a decision to have a large family. And often that's a really tough financial decision, and they accept that they're going to have to make sacrifices in order to do that. And I don't think it's unreasonable that if people are on benefits, that whilst for two children, the state will pay the support through universal credit, that it is capped at two children. I think that's the right balance in terms of fairness to taxpayers and those who have to take other choices when they're not depending on benefits.
A lot of Labour supporters would say these measures are only necessary because of the parlous state in which you left the economy and the fact that there was that £1 billion, I've not put a number to it, £1 billion black hole they were staring at. Mr. Stride.
Well, the £22 billion, Nick, actually, they conjured an enormous figure out of a hat, is the so-called black hole. The Office for Budget Responsibility, which is the independent government sort of watchdog of the finances, has comprehensively debunked that figure. What has actually happened here is that you had a government that came in, it slapped a lot of taxes on businesses. You just asked a moment ago, you didn't know whether hairdressers had apprentices.
Indeed.
Well, they do, but they're having rather less of them nowadays, and I've spent time with hairdressers, four or five of them actually, that I visited in the last couple of months.
That's why you look
and
so smart today.
Well, it is. It's a very fine haircut.
Indeed,
thank you so much.
And, well done.
Yeah, I was going to compliment you, but I thought that might be stretching.
No, I know. It's getting a bit Johnson-esque. This needs a cut, I think. Go on.
Slightly, yeah. Anyway, the point that I was making is if you load businesses up with these taxes, they just employ less people, including apprentices. They then sort of borrowed huge amounts of money, went on a huge spending spree, which has been inflationary. So we've seen interest rates higher than they would otherwise be for longer, and they're adding to the national debt. The servicing cost on our national debt, Nick, every year, £100 billion. That's twice what we spend on defence. And part of the reason it's so high is they've driven up interest rates through inflationary policies. Now, you add all that lot together, and then you ask the question, can we afford to just spend another £3.5 billion on abolishing the two-child benefit cap? And the answer, I think, is it's just overloading things far too much. They've got themselves into this mess, I'm afraid, of their own making.
On a sort of related question, Mr. Stride, why would it appear Nigel Farage is now leader of the opposition? The Labour Party seem far more concerned or aware of what he might or might not be suggesting than they are Kimmy Bader not.
Well, I think the PM, you know, he's got his own political manoeuvrings that he's engaged upon, and obviously the spin doctors and strategists in Labour HQ think that that's the right thing to say. The reality is we were elected as the second largest party in the last election, admittedly a crushing defeat for us, but at the end of the day, the public were very clear they want us to hold the government to account as the official opposition. Now, we're talking about winter fuel payments, which we thought was totally the wrong decision of this government to means test that. Great cruel to many poorer pensioners. The bulk of the reason why they're now U-turning is because we have been an effective opposition, holding them to account on this and many other issues. And that is something that we're going to continue
place.
To do. Now, well, look, the polls are going to move around. Look, we have a very unpopular Labour government. We have a Conservative Party that was comprehensively beaten.
Right?
Well, has admittedly, I totally agree, a lot of work to do to regain trust and a hearing with the electorate. That will take time and we will get there. We now have Farage and Reform. They have a vacuum to fill in that space. And they do it by running around promising lots of things to lots of people without thinking too much, particularly about how they're going to pay for it. So if Nigel Farage says today, as we expect, we'll scrap the two-child benefit.
You'll be caught on the hop again. Popularity will grow.
No, we're on the right side of the argument. So that's £3.5 billion he's just committed. It's a £1.7 billion price tag for winter fuel payments. In their manifesto, £140 billion worth of spending and tax cut promises, including taking everybody earning up to £20,000 out of income tax altogether. A £60 billion commitment, eye-watering, totally irresponsible. If you were anywhere near government trying to do that without a proper plan to fund it, we would all end up in a very dangerous place. And I don't say that lightly. That's just the simple facts.
Lastly, you have an article in one of the newspapers today, the Daily Mail. Rachel Reeves has attracted some interesting nicknames down the... well, I was going to say years, not even years, is it? Down the months. She's now the tin foil chancellor. Briefly explain why, Mr. Stride.
Well, because she's just basically zigzagging all over the place. I mean, take the fuel payment. Well, it folds. It folds, doesn't it? She says she's the iron
chancellor.
It's
also very tough.
You know,
And contends with heat.
Oh, tinfoil, no, you could take a sheet of it and rip it up into pieces, which is what she's doing to the economy.
Grateful for your time, Mel Stride, thank you. Conservative MP, Shadow Chancellor of the Exchequer, pointing out the concerns over this two-child benefit cap. 350,000 children lifted out of poverty, but as Mr. Stride says, or claims, his government was working harder than any others. Let's have a last minute or so on some of the social media and texts that have come in on this. We talked about the position in which Keir Starmer finds himself. Extraordinary political stability. Mark Sells in Cambridgeshire. This is actually worth going over these figures. Well done, Mr. Sells. In 2019, Labour won 32.2% of the vote and was thumped. In 2024, they won 33.7%, i.e. 1.5 more, and enjoyed a landslide. The reason is obvious. Reform UK split the vote on the right, largely taking voters away from the Tories. It has suited both Reform and Labour for them to attack the Tories and not lay a glove on each other. Perhaps that mutual non-aggression pact is ending now. Ian says, how come whenever Farage is mentioned as economic policies, you never ask where the money's going to come from? The second someone suggests the government they're doing something good, you ask where the money is coming from. Please address this imbalance. Ian, let's hear how much money Nigel Farage would spend, and then I promise you we will look at that aspect tomorrow. There are figures that it could be like somewhere in the region of a £1.5 billion a year, the two-child benefit, in which case, of course, he has to say where the money comes from. Let's get one call in. Mark in Kenilworth. Mark, you're on the radio. You want to talk about the benefit? I'm so sorry, Matt. I misread that. Thank you, Matt.
Right,
yes. Sorry, that's
right,
my glasses.
Don't worry.
Go ahead, Matt.
I've been called worse things in my life, anyway.
You and I both. what is the point you want to make about benefit cap?
I'm a yes and no on it, but... What about the parents who are in poverty with one child? It's not going to sort them out, is it?
Oh, I'm sorry, whether you're Matt or you're... Let's try one last time, Matt, not least because I've got your name. This is a terrible line. Let's try one last time the point you want to make.
Yeah, it's about a child cap, and
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Matt. Having got your name wrong, we're now going to be able to hear what you say because the line's too bad. Let's offer him the opportunity. We'll find a way to fit him in, because it's only fair. But in fact, we have come to that the end of this hour. We'll try and fit you in. The music means we are moving on, and we're talking about apprenticeships. Apparently, it can be everything from hairdressers to engineers via electricians. And, of course, carpenters, extolled by the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson.
But my message to young people is that we will provide the opportunities for you to get on in fantastic careers like construction and engineering, but it's for young people to seize those opportunities as well.
Plus, we will go back to the tragedy that played out. A day should have been an absolute joy and celebration turning into tragedy in Liverpool. And you remember that British MP who's completed a record-breaking Everest ascent, Al Carnes, the Veterans Minister? He was with us just days before he went off. Well, he's done it. He's broken every record going. And he'll join us later in the hour to explain just how he achieved it. 9 o'clock news is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, two people are in a serious condition in hospital after a car ploughed into a crowd in Liverpool. A total of 27 people, including four children, were taken to hospital from Liverpool's Premier League victory parade yesterday. A 53-year-old local man is being held by police who aren't treating the incident as terrorism. Liverpool's city council leader is Liam Robinson.
Everybody's deeply shocked and really upset, and our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody that was affected, particularly those people that are particularly poorly in hospital. Do want to put on record my sort of thanks to the emergency services. We're working really, really closely with Merseyside Police and the other emergency services on their investigations going forward.
Doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action over their latest pay offer. Residents, previously known as junior doctors in England, have been offered an average pay rise of 5.4% this year. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has urged them to vote against strikes. Nigel Farage will accuse Keir Starmer of being unpatriotic and out of touch in a speech later. He'll also confirm Reform's commitment to scrap the two-child benefit cap and reinstate winter fuel payments for all pensioners. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has dismissed Mr. Farage's attack.
Nigel Farage has never been on the side of working people. He opposes the measures that we are introducing that will help working people. For example, our Employment Rights Bill that will give more people rights at work.
He doesn't agree with the two-child benefit cap, Secretary of State.
Well, he flip-flops on all of this. He's backed it in the past. And
doesn't your government flip-flop a bit?
They're not serious people.
Bridget Phillipson's told Nick that she's rebalancing the system for apprenticeships in England. Ministers are going ahead with controversial plans to scrap funding for postgraduate apprenticeship courses. They promised to create thousands of new places for under-21s at entry level instead. The King will oversee the state opening of Canada's Parliament on day two of his trip to Ottawa. He'll set out the legislative agenda for Mark Carney's government as Canada faces threats to trade and sovereignty from Donald Trump. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 56 at 87.74. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 90. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales with sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The people of Britain love their fancy blenders. They bought loads of them. And luckily, if they bought them with Barclaycard, they earned rewards. In fact, they'll earn rewards on all their eligible purchases.
It's a more convenient way to consume your fruit and veg.
What you buy is your business. Giving you rewards on purchases is ours. Barclaycard. Make money work for you. 28.9% APR representative variable subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday the 27th of May, coming up in this hour in praise of apprenticeships. You heard from the Education Secretary in the first hour. What has the reality been for you? Plus to South Africa. Do you remember this confrontation in the White House? No, it's not that a rare event, isn't it? This time it was the turn of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa.
Death. 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 Horrible death. Death. I don't know.
You don't know, but we'll find out what the truth is in South Africa about the supposed plight of white farmers. Plus, do you remember, going back in time, it was in the studio, so of course no confrontation. This was Labour MP, Veterans Minister Al Khan, speaking about his ambition to be the most rapid ascent of Mount Everest.
But I suppose the concern is failure. One, you can't counter the weather, and the second one is altitude. We just can't tell how our body's going. There's lots of different, you know, haste and different injuries you can have from going too high, too fast. We can't guarantee that our bodies are prepared for it.
But he and his team have done it, and he'll be with us later in the hour to give us all the background.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you were listening in the first hour of the show, you will know we heard about 120,000 new training opportunities in areas such as construction, engineering, and local and health and local social care. Now, apprenticeship budget exceeds £3 billion for the first time. The government is boasting. New foundation apprenticeships have been announced. What's called upskilling the domestic workforce will, says the government, drive growth and rebuild Britain with better infrastructure and housing. It's all part of their, the government would say, plan for change. And, of course, they have those very ambitious targets in the world of housing. But, well, what lies behind it? And are there jobs at the end of it? It's all well and good to train a lot of bricklayers and engineers and electricians, but will there be the work afterwards on our construction sites? Well, it was Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson who's been putting forward these policies, and she told me in the first hour why the government saw it as such a vital ingredient of this plan.
We are announcing more opportunities for young people so that they have the chance to get on in fantastic trades like construction. I'm speaking to you today from an independent training provider in Sunderland that do amazing work to support young people.
Well, I can see behind you. I mean, you could make a spice rack with the kit that's arranged behind you. It's extraordinary, Bridget Phillips. So where are you? Is that planks of wood and everything else behind you?
I'm at a construction academy run by Learning Curve Group. I think I'll leave it to others. It's not my skill set, I'm afraid. But, okay. But I think it demonstrates the great opportunities that are out there for our young people. We're also making sure that there are more foundation apprenticeships for young people in areas like construction. So they get a taster of bricklaying, carpentry, plastering, before they then go on to specialise, because it's a big leap for young people. They leave school, they're perhaps a bit uncertain about what the future holds. But my message to young people is that we will provide the opportunities for you to get on in fantastic careers like construction and engineering, but it's for young people to seize those opportunities as well.
How long are some of these apprenticeships?
So a full apprenticeship can be up to a year, but the foundation apprenticeships are a shorter route. That means that young people get a bit more of a taste of what the industry will hold, a bit more experience before they then go on to make a final decision. But it also makes sure that, particularly for some young people that might have found school harder or might have had other challenges in their lives, they're better supported, they get that taster, and then they're able to move on to a full apprenticeship. And I've met with, lots of apprentices in my time as Education Secretary, recently meeting with some bricklaying apprentices who were so hopeful and optimistic about the future, had had such fantastic experience, were thinking about maybe starting their own businesses at some point in the future. I want that for more young people, because we know that we've got a really big challenge where it comes to 1 in 8 young people who are not in employment, education or training. And Roots into Construction, as one example, is a fantastic way we'll make sure that young people can get on into brilliant careers.
How confident are you that once they've done their apprenticeship in bricklaying, carpentry, whatever, there are jobs for them as they come out of their apprenticeship, Secretary of State?
There are definitely jobs there, and there'll be even more jobs in the years to come, because as a government, we want to build 1.5 million new homes. So this is an opportunity not just to create the homes that our country needs and be part of that national effort to build more homes, but it's also the chance to have a fantastic career. And I want young people to have a range of opportunities. You said at the start about young people taking exams, wondering what the future holds. It's about having a range of different routes for young people, whether that's into apprenticeships, college or university. I want young people to be able to choose what's best for them. But absolutely, it's time we took skills far more seriously as a country. Under the last government, a big drop off in the number of apprenticeship starts for young people in particular. And that's why we're rebalancing the system with much more of a focus on young people. And that does mean taking decisions around not funding in the same way some of those level 7, those master's level qualifications, those apprenticeships, and actually tilting it back to serve young people in a much better way.
Secretary of State for Education, Bridget Phillips, and now she is a politician, although she was at that workshop, of course, but what does she actually know? What is the reality? Have you been an apprentice? Mike is in Insto in North Devon. Mike, have you been an apprenticeship? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, back a long time ago, 1975.
Oh, right.
I started my apprenticeship after a brilliant course at the Sir John Cash School of Art in North London near Aldgate, where we were given 1 year's pre-training, ready to get into the workplace. We were a viable asset to any employer because we already had a certain level of skills that had been taught to us.
You've not told me the field you're in, I don't think. What is it?
Pardon?
What is it you were an apprentice in?
Oh, sorry. I did an apprenticeship in silversmithing and goldsmithing.
Right.
For a very famous silversmith called Gerald Benny.
Right.
Who was one of the very few in the country that had, actually, he had 4 royal warrants.
So right.
The clientele was incredibly, affluent.
Okay. So talk me through. So how long were you an apprentice?
So my apprenticeship was a 5-year apprenticeship. I was apprenticed through the Goldsmiths Company. 1 year of my apprenticeship was the college course accounted for 1 year of my apprenticeship. I completed my 5 years, 4 years at Gerald Benny's, and then went on to set up my own company move on to employing people myself.
How many people did you employ?
I think not huge. I never went big. It was never my desire to go big, but we would have employed 4 or 5 people.
What would you, without that apprenticeship, would you have been able to set up your business?
No.
And what attracted you into that line of work?
My passion at school was always metalwork, and I was very successful at it. It was either going to be silversmithing or engineering. Funny enough, silversmithing's a bit of a bizarre industry to move into. It was my mother who directed me down that course, and bless her, she was very helpful in getting me this apprenticeship.
And lastly, you talked about your mother. Have you been a father?
I am a father to three lovely boys.
And did any of them go into apprenticeships? What have they done?
My eldest son, who's 32, is now running my business in Berkshire.
Oh, right.
And I mentor him and let him... I'm at a stage of transitioning out of the business to hand over the reins completely to him, mm-hmm. probably within the next 2 years.
Okay. Lastly, the government, let's talk politics to finish, Mike. They're saying that this is the way forward, this is the way to create growth. Obviously, it's worked for you. What would your caveat be? What would your warning be? It's been successful for you, but do you think it would work for absolutely everybody?
I don't think there's any warning. To go into a method, I'm going to give you a little, if you don't mind, very brief little story.
Yeah, go ahead.
When I went to start my apprenticeship, I was told to go back to college on a Thursday. Go back to college, Mike, all the way from Reading up to London, get on the train, go up there, spend all your time travelling, and go and do what was called day release. You probably remember it.
Mm-hmm.
So day release was the government's way of making sure that the employer wasn't taking advantage of the apprentice. Now, when I got to college, there was 25 people on my course with one tutor, and it was all very jovial and not much work was being done. When I got back to the workshops the following day, I said to my my boss, "You're wasting your money. You're paying for a course that I really don't need. In this workshop, I've got four tutors, 4-1.
Mm.
The workplace can give you such a more broad education mm-hmm. and grounding in an industry. For me, the finest place to learn a trade is within the trade. You build no debt, you get paid. Admittedly, I was paid not a lot, but I would have worked for nothing in those days because I enjoyed it so much.
Mm-hmm.
£18 a week, I think, back in 1976. I know.
Bless me.
But no, there is no finer place to learn your craft than in the workplace.
Mike, thanks, and I'm so glad the story's worked out well, and it's lovely one of your lads is going to carry on the business. Good luck to him. Good luck to you, Mike. Thank you. Paul's in Narberth in Wales, if I said that correctly. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Talk to me about apprenticeships. What was it that you did?
I did electrician's apprenticeship back in the mid-70s. I struggled a bit in school, and my father was a tradesman, and the natural push was for me to go and do a trade. I agree with what Mike just said. The way to learn is to work on the tools. So when I was working, it was working directly for a contractor, shadowing a fully qualified electrician, and you would hand the tools and you'd run around and you'd basically be his sort of...
One day a week
I had to go to college, which was some practical work, but mainly the theory behind electricity,
mm-hmm.
the installation, the regulations, and you did an exam at the end of each year. You had to pass your exam or your employer wouldn't employ you the following year.
How long were you in it?
4 years.
And then you came out into the workplace?
I 4 years, I stayed with him for another 3 years. I then went into technical sales.
Mm-hmm.
I needed my qualification. I needed an electrical background to go into technical sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for a number of years. Then I set up my own electrical contracting company.
Okay.
And did you offer
apprenticeships?
We did offer...
And how did it work as the employer side of the apprenticeship offer?
We were given a subsidy by the government.
Yep. But did it work as the boss? Did it work? Or did you have some good ones? Did you have some bad ones? What would you say?
I would say we had more good than bad.
Is this going to work for the government, this idea?
I think the only way it will work, Nick, is if the apprenticeship is done on the tools through an employer.
Paul, thank you for your background. Simon in Ramsbottom, my son has an apprenticeship working for a construction company. It's the best thing ever. I headhunt in his trade. He did it all himself. Goes to university on Mondays and loves it. Mick in South Devon, governments don't create apprenticeships, companies do. A one-year apprenticeship as outlined by Mrs. Phillipson is no apprenticeship. I did five-year engineering, building military helicopters with one day and one evening a week at technical college. I wouldn't have traded it for any university degree. In the 80s, a newly graduated engineer asked me how to work out the volume of a cylinder. How did this person get through a four-year engineering degree course without knowing schoolboy maths? Keep them coming. And after the news, we go back to the story yesterday, the events in Liverpool. Find out if there's been any move forward with that police investigation after the football parade. It's 9:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Dozens of people have been injured after a car was driven into a crowd at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Apprenticeship funding is to be shifted away from high-level courses to focus on training for under-21s, and doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action in England. LBC weather, cloud and rain for many, with some sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from before Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. It's all down to an accident where one lane is closed. It's still very slow as well on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge after a lorry broke down earlier. Long delays on the A13 westbound to the Pitsea flyover. Some power cables have fallen into the road. And in Dartford, there are queues on Bob Dunn Way going westbound to Thames Road. And that's because a lorry has overturned. In Bethnal Green, Roman Road is blocked westbound at Globe Road, and that's because a car's broken down. And on the trains on London Overground, no Weaver line between Edmonton Green and Enfield Town.
This is LBC.
New Aqua Una Primer is made by us, Dulux Trade.
And approved by professional painters like me and you.
It's made to get a grip on all major surfaces.
From wood to metal, tiles to UPVC, inside or out, this stuff sticks.
And it's made to be recoat ready in 60 minutes.
So we can get the job done.
Dulux Trade Aqua Una Primer. It's made by us.
And approved by you. And me.
Claim your free Aqua Una Primer sample today at participating merchants while stocks last.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
When you sail on a Saga cruise, you really can relax, because so much is included. A choice of speciality restaurants? Included. A balcony with every cabin? Included. Wonderfully attentive staff? Included. Spotting a whale out at sea? Included. Realizing the whale is actually just a wave? Included. Search Saga Boutique Cruises 2026 season on sale now. Experience is everything. T's and C's apply, over 50s only.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World. We're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
The joy and success of apprenticeships. It appears the government could be onto something here. We'll take more of your stories, whatever it might be. Particularly, I'd like to talk about hairdressing, because as I understood it, that used to be, I think, a profession, trade, job that had lots of apprenticeships. So if you're involved in that, it'd be good to talk. But we need to go back to the events last night. Around 6 p.m. it started, the horrific end, effectively, what should have been a day of joy, celebration and joy in Liverpool, ending in such a tragic fashion. Let's go back to LBC's reporter on the scene, Water Street in Liverpool, Liam Gotting. Liam, I think you've been speaking with the local council, is that right? Morning again.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, well, I don't know if you can hear behind me, but the cleanup is very much underway here on the Strand where it meets Water Street, which is where the end of the parade was, where hundreds of thousands of people were gathered to celebrate Liverpool's Premier League title win parade yesterday. But certainly the carnage on Water Street last night is still evident, with empty crates of beer, broken glass. There's abandoned hats and scarves which are soaked in last night's rain, all still laid out in the street. There's officers still patrolling up and down the cordon, and a huge blue and white forensics tent sat in the middle of the road as police continue their investigation here. Now, we know a 53-year-old man from the Liverpool area has been arrested and is being held by police after a car appeared to accelerate into the crowd as the thousands of people were squashed into Water Street here, leaving Liverpool's Premier League title parade yesterday. We learned at a press conference that it's not being treated as terrorism and it is believed to be an isolated incident. Now, Liverpool City Council leader Liam Robinson has been speaking at the cordon this morning.
I think, let's be honest, it was truly shocking, you know, what had been a joyous day, not just for Liverpool Football Club, but the whole city, you know, with the incident that then happened after the parade. Everybody's deeply shocked and really upset, and our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody that was affected, particularly those people that are particularly poorly in hospital. Do want to put on record my sort of thanks to the emergency services. We're working really, really closely with Merseyside Police and the other emergency services on their investigations going forward. And I think we would sort of ask that nobody shares the horrific footage on social media, but any information that anybody has, please make sure it's shared with Merseyside Police so we can support their investigations.
Well, Nick, 47 people in total were injured last night, including four children. 27 of those were hospitalised and two people suffered serious injuries, including one of those children. We know that fire crews were on hand last night. They helped to remove three adults and a child who were trapped underneath the car after the incident. Les was one of the many people on Water Street at the time. He saw the whole thing happen, and this is what he told us.
Who's what, mate? Yeah, I even took a photo, not when it happened, obviously.
No.
I took a photo to show my girlfriend, we were stuck here, look. See there, the crowd is, and he's played through there like that. I sent the missus saying, we can't move, we're stuck in that. And he's actually come through there. As far as I can see, he's panicked, or whatever he's done, he's just gone bang. Foot down, you never see the car gets fast, didn't he? I'm still traumatised, you see it on TV, don't you? But you never see it there.
Well, Nick, up until 6 o'clock, it was a day of celebration, of joy in this city. Hundreds of thousands of people were painting the sky red, were painting the ground red here with confetti and with fireworks. It was an incredible day, but at 6 o'clock, that day turned dark and ended in devastation and in chaos and carnage here. And people are walking by now, stopping on their way to work, pausing, talking to us, talking to each other, trying to find out any more information about what's happened. There's a lot of concern here, as you can imagine, as I say, yesterday ending in devastation after what was supposed to be an incredible day for the city.
Liam Gosling reporting from Liverpool. Let's come back to our conversation about apprenticeships. I talked about hairdressers. Edward is in Farringdon. You're involved in some way in hairdressing apprenticeships, are you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call. We spoke about 2 months ago. I was bouncing around my bedroom in Elstree. I'm now in Farringdon in my slightly less overjoyed.
Right. Look, why? Just remind me, why were you, if it's appropriate to answer this question, why were you bouncing around in your bedroom?
The government had just announced at that point that they were removing functional skills from some apprenticeship training, which was a great thing. It was another layer out the way, stopping kids who perhaps weren't necessarily academic at school achieving an endpoint assessment. They couldn't even get there without passing English and math, which was really ridiculous. So that was great news. 6 weeks later, maybe a bit less, the government then whack up national minimum wage and effectively sort of put a kibosh completely on apprenticeship industry at our level. We've seen a massive drop because of that, and it's kind of devastating that they love apprenticeships. We know how good they are at apprenticeships. We know how we can take a young person and create a great hairdresser.
How long does it take?
It takes anywhere from 18 months to 2 years to do it properly, and that's just the beginning. Then there's advanced level and so on. The problem is that the previous government decided to raise the level of apprenticeships to that of university, which was crazy. This government is making more sense. We need a vocational skill that pushes, you know, apprenticeships for a vocational skills.
Sorry, the previous government said you had to have a university degree to become a hairdresser.
No, they pushed the level of apprenticeships up and up and up to a point that it equaled, and it didn't give an either or situation. So the Secretary of State right now, she's correct. We need an apprenticeship route. It's a wonderful route, certainly for things like hairdressing. Just a figure that we picked up just before pandemic, 92% of hairdressers, this is just before the pandemic, in the industry came through an apprenticeship program. So those actually on the floor, 92% were trained through an apprenticeship. That shows its success.
Yeah, okay. What will the impact of this be in the in this profession now, what the government is saying, do you think, Edward?
Unless they drop the national minimum wage, unless they give us a break on VAT, it's not going to make any difference because employers won't be able to afford to take apprenticeships on. And that's a devastating loss. It was fascinating hearing your caller talking about Goldsmith.
Mm-hmm. That was Mike.
Yeah, he's absolutely correct. Wandering off to college one day a week does not give you any of those skills. Learning whilst you earn on the job is the best way. So it's a begging government, give us a break here at our level because it does work. We can change people's lives.
Edward, thank you. Glad you're no longer bouncing around the bedroom. You're settled in Farringdon. Louis in Ipswich. Louis, you were an apprentice once. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, I was an apprentice at the age of 25.
In what area? What did you do?
It was carpentry.
Right.
So I was in retail before that for 6 years, and I wasn't really going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily for me, funny luckily, but I was made redundant. I didn't know what to do, and this was just before the lockdown. Luckily, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go for it and go for a carpentry apprentice, because mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do it. I went for it, and it's probably the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Why?
Because it's completely transformed me as a person. I was stagnant beforehand. Now I'm in my second apprenticeship, learning about construction management. And that was 5 years ago. I done my first apprenticeship.
So you're not a chippy anymore then? You've moved on, have you?
Yeah, I'm not a chippy anymore. I loved it, but what it done was it sparked my joy for learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the most important thing. For years, I wasn't bothered. I suddenly started learning things and then started realizing I could do things. Carpentry was my dream, and then I quickly realize that there's more out there. So I think it's such a good outlet to improve people's lives. And I don't think it matters about age at all. I think people of all ages should have an opportunity to do an apprenticeship.
So what is it precisely you do now?
So I'm an inspector now.
Okay.
So I'm an inspector now. I got a promotion. I'm also looking to the future and learning about the management side of it. So hopefully I can go further. And I think I'm just going to keep learning until I stop, I think.
Well, why not? Keep it going. Good luck to you. Thank you. Well done. Total change in life when you found the joy of learning. Jean's in Bromley. Jean, what was the hairdresser? Sorry, it was hairdressing you did your apprenticeship in, is that right?
Yes, way, way back. Back in 1953.
Oh, my goodness me.
Yes, I know.
How long was the apprenticeship?
Well, that's the thing. It was slightly different. It was a 3-year apprenticeship,
mm-hmm.
but when you'd finished that, you weren't classed as a qualified hairdresser. You then became, for 2 years, you became an improver, and you did an improvership, which lasted another 2 years, which meant you weren't entitled to full pay until you had done 5 years in total.
Right. Okay. And how did that work for you personally?
Personally, I loved it. Because I was in the West End, I saw a different side of life. We had the lower royals, and we had a lot. And I went through the debutante seasons.
Who's the most famous person, the hair of whom you've cut? I've missed that. I've mangled that since.
Well, not cut, but apprenticed to.
Yeah.
There was, in those days, Princess Margaret.
Oh, wow.
And then there was Margaret Rutherford.
Yes, the actress.
An actress, but then I was only apprentice,
She played Madame Arcati.
In what?
Blythe Spirit.
Oh, did she? I'm afraid you're far more knowledgeable than I.
Yeah.
But in those
also,
days...
Miss Marple, she played Miss Marple.
Oh, that's right. Mm. Yes, that's right. Yeah. But in those days, you were put to one assistant.
Right. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You can train to be a doctor in, I think, about 4 years. A vet in seven. A hairdresser, 5 years. What the hell did you learn?
Well, that was then. But nowadays, okay.
Well, what was different about hair in the 50s that's not the same with hair in the 2020s?
Well, nothing about the hair, but about the method of training.
Years.
Yes, before you got full pay, but you were working after three, but you were an improver.
Years.
You were an improver, an improvership.
Mm. But doesn't it just go, well, at least for gentlemen's hair, hello, how would you like your hair? Okay, fine. Booked a holiday? I mean, that's basically all you have to learn, isn't it?
Well, you've got to have people skills, I must admit.
Booked a holiday, and then, no, you don't say, why not? You just say, oh, really? You're not going away?
I mean, well, if hairdressers wrote books on their clients, it would be very interesting because people do, women in particular, do talk to their hairdressers and you hear
What's the guiltiest secret that a client... Did someone ever say to you, I'm cheating on my husband?
Oh, good Lord, yes. They don't use those words. But
is that why they're getting a new hair? What did they say? New man, new hair, or something?
It used to be the other way round. Really, they used to sort of moan or complete about their husbands who they suspected.
Right. Did you cut men's hair?
Yes.
Do men moan as much about their wives as women do about their husbands?
Yes, but they also moan about their men friends.
Oh, what, like, this friend's really boring? I've got a mate called Clive and he's so boring.
That's it, yes. Yeah.
Well, Clive is boring, let's be honest about it.
And funnily enough, not much about sport.
I have enjoyed it. What do you do now in Bromley?
I am retired at my age now, my goodness me. I mean, I'm getting on for 90, so...
If I need a haircut, could you do me one at mate's rates?
I could do one. Whether you'd got mate's rates, I don't know.
Look after yourself. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Jean, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Coming up after the news, we look at the reality of the allegations put to the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, by Donald Trump. It's 9:32. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get headlines from Thomas Watts.
27 people are in hospital after a car ploughed into a crowd during Liverpool's Premier League victory parade. A 53-year-old man is being held by police who say they are not treating it as terrorism. The government has outlined a change in focus on apprenticeships in England. Public funding will be prioritised for training at lower levels for the under-21s instead of master's level. The British Medical Association has started balloting doctors for possible industrial action. Resident, previously known as junior doctors in England, have been offered an average pay rise of 5.4% this year. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales, sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
It's a great British drizzle day. Dubrolly or not Dubrolly? Time for a TUI getaway. Swap your coat for your cosy. Your sofa for a sun lounger. Swap puddles for swimming pools. That's more like it. With flights from London Gatwick, we'll help you find your holiday happiness. TUI. Live happy. At all protected. T's and C's apply.
Paying by card?
Earning points. It's as simple as, it's what you can do with them that counts. Discoveries with friends!
Pasta primavera?
Memories with your taste buds. Or just one epic... Spend your points on what really matters to you. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Limited time offers end 27th of May 2025. Search Amex cards.
Preferred reward gold credit card. Representative 87.3% APR variable. Annual fee applies after the first year. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Here at Pets in a Pickle, our name has caused some confusion. We've had people asking us what pickles we recommend. And a lovely lady looking for a pickle costume for her pet. But they've all been barking up the wrong tree. We actually offer simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, including unlimited access to video consultations with First Vet. So, for pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to apprenticeships in just a moment, but we're going back to events last week in the White House, and he wasn't the first world leader, and he probably won't be the last to be ambushed by President Donald Trump. I speak of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who was confronted by the president of the White House, you may recall, with printed copies of articles showing the deaths of white farmers in his country as Trump saw it.
Death, 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 horrible death, death, I don't know. To pick anyone, white South Africans are fleeing because of the violence and racist laws.
And the response from the South African president?
People who do get killed, unfortunately, through criminal activity, are not only white people. Majority of them are black people. And we have now been utilized...
The farmers are not black. I don't say that's good or bad, but the farmers are not black.
Well, as I often tell you, when I leave the studio, or when I leave this recording, the actual radio studio, I read all your emails and social media and everything else, and then a big bundle of newspapers goes under my arm, and I read what's called the feature pages. And last week, the end of last week, Friday, there was a tremendous piece in the Daily Telegraph feature pages about the reality of the claims made by Donald Trump. One of the authors was David Blair, who is the chief foreign affairs commentator of the Telegraph. He's joined by his colleague Ben Farmer, but it's David who joins me now. This is a heck of a task, but I'm going to give it to you because you're the man who can do it. Can you encapsulate the 15, 16, 1800 words that you wrote with your colleague? What is the reality in South Africa? Morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me that task. let me sum it up very quickly. Let's look at the facts. In the last quarter of last year, there were nearly 7,000 murders across South Africa.
Wow.
Of those, 12 took place on farms. One was a farmer. The remainder were farm workers or people staying on farms. If you look a bit more broadly, in the whole of 2023-24, there were 27,621 murders across South Africa. 49 of them happened on farms, which, if my maths is correct, is about 0.2%. So when you look at those numbers, I think it's pretty clear that language like genocide is inflammatory and patently false.
Your article is a powerful one. There were so many that jumped out at me, David. Not least, one fact, 75 people are murdered in South Africa every day compared with fewer than two in England and Wales, even though, as you and your colleague make the point, the populations are respectively about the same. Why is there such violence in South Africa, David?
I think there's a short answer to that. Mass unemployment and mass poverty. About 30% of all South Africans are jobless. And if you're young, it could be more like 60%. And millions still live in absolute poverty in squalid townships. And that is a breeding ground for violence. However, as the president of South Africa pointed out, the great majority of the victims of those violence are themselves black and very often poor as well.
Now, Donald Trump made much of one particular case of, if I pronounce this correctly, Jan Jurgens, but he seemed to have got his facts wrong. Remind my listeners what he said about Mr. Jurgens.
Very briefly, he said that Mr. Jurgens was murdered, when in fact Mr. Jurgens was very brutally assaulted and tied up on his farm, but was not murdered. He is still alive, in fact. So it was a straightforward inaccuracy.
Is the government, the South African government, doing enough to combat crime?
No, I think everyone would agree that they're not doing enough. And I think probably the government of South Africa itself would admit that they're not yet doing enough. Crime is a colossal problem, but it has very deep-rooted causes. And until and unless they can get the economy recovering, it's very hard to see how things will improve. It's worth remembering that South Africa has had pretty much 20 years of economic stagnation, and that explains mass unemployment.
How popular otherwise is the president at home, David?
Well, last year he managed to lose the ANC's majority in parliament, which is quite an extraordinary thing since the ANC has won every previous election since the end of apartheid by thumping majorities. He now governs in coalition with 10 other political parties, and he has struggled. But the question is whether this new government has a chance of reviving the economy. Thus far, I have to say, the omens are not good.
With all this level of unrest and crime, it's hardly surprising that fringe parties spring up. How concerned should we be about Julius Malema and the Economic Freedom Fighters Organization?
We should be concerned. Malema is, we use the word popular. populist rather freely. Populist doesn't really do justice to Mr. Malema. He is quite a dangerous character. He trades in the most incendiary rhetoric. His ideas for managing South Africa's economy would probably destroy it. Now, the good news is that the last election, he only got 10.8% of the vote. And of course, he's always been in opposition. But the great danger for South Africa is that if this new government fails to revive the economy, people like Mr. Malema are waiting in the wings.
Lastly, how did Donald Trump's ambush of Cyril Ramaphosa go down at home in South Africa?
Not very well, or rather, it probably went quite well for Mr. Ramaphosa, since he responded very calmly and very deliberately. And there are it's very noticeable that very few South Africans would use the kind of language that Donald Trump has used.
Fascinating background. If you can still get access to that Telegraph piece, it's a great read. David Blair, thank you. You're Chief Foreign Affairs Commentator at the Telegraph. You wrote that piece with your colleague Ben Farmer about events in South Africa. We're coming events back here in the UK. And in the first hour, we spoke with the Education Secretary, and she seems to be, well, on track, a lot of you would say, a drive now to get tens of thousands of more apprenticeships out there and back it up with hundreds of thousands, indeed millions of pounds worth of cash. And I'm asking, what did an apprenticeship ever do for you? Peter's in Cookham. Peter, what did it do for you? Hello.
Good morning, Nick. Morning, long sir. Time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, good to have you on. When you say long time, how long?
Well, 7 to 10 years.
Oh, wow. Good to have you on. It's taken 10 years for you to... Come on, what made you reach for the phone and dial that number, 015?
Well, I wanted to have the pleasure of speaking with the voice of reason of LBC. and I'm probably a bit of an anomaly in that I was... fortunate enough to be publicly school educated, but made a bit of a hash of it.
Right. I don't know. Plenty of my mates did the same. I wouldn't worry about that.
No, but I had a good time all the same. Yeah. But ended up getting a craft apprenticeship, basically, in the motor industry.
As what? So, as an engineer? Mechanic?
Mechanic, yep. Basically. Fortunately, it was for Rolls-Royce. so I'm working there. And for the first year, it was a four-year apprenticeship for me. And in the first year, it was literally like military boot camp. They knocked the stuffing out of you. Only their extremely high standards.
Right.
So it did all that, finished the apprenticeship, ended up getting involved in training in the car industry. So training technicians as opposed to apprenticeships. Ended up running a training department for a manufacturer. And I set up an apprenticeship scheme for... upcoming technicians. So we did that, encompassing not only what was available from the governments, because at that stage they had just about finished what was called the training boards. So you had the engineering training board, the road transport industry training board, and I'm sure there was a bricklayers training board and all this lot. And basically the government used to send round an inspector to the employer to make sure that your training was being carried out to a sufficiently high quality.
Okay.
So, did all that, ended up setting up an apprenticeship scheme for this manufacturer, because at that stage, skilled technicians were being poached left, right and centre. So, we wanted to try and create something that not only created brilliant technicians, but also kept them within the fold, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, we had a golden handshake. So, the manufacturer put in 50% and the employer put in 50% into a fund that was only paid out to the then what would be technicians when they were 24 or 25.
I see.
Probably when they're thinking about, you know, settling down, buying somewhere, whatever. So that was basically just to maintain them within the stream. But I would say we have gone back so far. If we could turn the clock back, I mean, I started my apprenticeship in 75.
Oh,
if
boy.
We could turn the clock back, that would be, in my view, a real step forward, because I think whatever we introduce now will be a little bit and a little bit too late. When I hear of plumbers being fully qualified after 6 months, I'm thinking, no way.
Let me ask you finally, and I don't want to cause any upset here, but so you go to private school, I would imagine your mum and dad probably work quite hard to pay for that, and you come out and you've not got the O-levels and the A-levels and you say, I'm going to be an apprentice. How did that go down with dad and or mum?
Well, fortunately, I did, in fact, get a scholarship to that public school. In fairness, my parents could have afforded it, you know, if they so wished.
Okay.
A bit disappointed because my other siblings went off to be professionals.
That always helps, doesn't it, when they do that?
Yes, really puts me in the shadows, doesn't it? Yeah, that's his life. But, no, I think I've been incredibly fortunate, and I would say a lot of it is based, one, don't harp on about it, publicly school education, but the basis of my training was you've got to do it properly, you've got to get it right.
Yeah.
If it's no good, you scrap it and you start again.
All right.
And I think that's what's missing.
I've got to go to headlines. Couple of questions. Have you made a dollar? Have you done all right?
I've done all right.
You've done all right. And your own children, if you have any, did they do apprenticeships or did you not have
kids? I don't have kids.
You didn't? Okay, so didn't go in that path. By the way, if I've got bad brakes, you could fix them for me, Peter. If I brought it up to Cookham, would you be able to do that for me?
I would have thought so, especially if it's one of your old Land Rovers, if you've still got it.
I have. Well, my God, you have been listening. I do have a Series 1 Land Rover. It's, let's say it wouldn't need just its brakes doing, it would need just about everything doing. But at least I got that car, the other one got half-inched. Peter, great story. Looking forward to it. Coming up after the news.
But I suppose the concern is failure. One, you can't counter the weather, and the second one is altitude. We just can't tell how our bodies are going. There's lots of different, you know, haste and different injuries you can have from going too high, too fast. We can't guarantee that our bodies are prepared for it.
Now, that's MP Al Carnes, Veterans Minister, speaking about his attempt to smash to smithereens all the records of climbing up Everest. He did it, and he joins me to explain how after this. 9:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Two people are seriously ill in hospital after a car ploughed into a crowd in Liverpool. Doctors have started receiving ballots for possible industrial action over their latest pay offer, and the King will oversee the state opening of Canada's Parliament later. LBC weather, cloud and rain spreading across England and Wales, sunny spells and showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 26 at Waltham Abbey to 25 at the A10. And that was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. Also, all the lanes are back open on the A12 southbound at Old Ford, but there are still queues all the way back to Hackney. Very busy in the city on East Smithfield, westbound heading towards Tower Hill, and that's where a car's broken down. And in Bethnal Green, Roman Road remains partially blocked westbound. A car's broken down and that's causing delays. Better news for the Weaver line. It's back up and running now between Edmonton Green and Enfield Town. But there are delays of about half an hour on Great Western Railway services to and from Paddington.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Tragedy in Liverpool and a profound, worrying sea change in how the alleged culprit is described.
James O'Brien on LBC.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
FanningDental.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wickes to design our new kitchen.
At Wickes, we have 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms and minimum spend apply.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Redeem all week only in the app. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
When you sail on a Saga cruise, you really can relax because so much is included. A choice of speciality restaurants? Included. A balcony with every cabin? Included. Wonderfully attentive staff? Included. Spotting a whale out at sea? Included. Realising the whale is actually just a wave? Included. Search Saga Boutique Cruises 2026 season on sale now. Experience is everything. T's and C's apply over 50s only.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My claim group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My claim group is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back. There has to be widespread enthusiasm for the government idea of apprenticeships in just a moment. Take some more calls on that. But I want to take you back about 10 days. Who remembers this?
But I suppose the concern is failure. One, you can't counter the weather. And the second one is altitude. We just can't tell how our body is going. There's lots of different, you know, haste and different injuries you can have from going too high, too fast. We can't guarantee that our bodies are prepared for it.
That's Labour MP for Birmingham, Selly Oak, and Veterans Minister Al Khan speaking exactly 2 weeks ago today, apparently, about his attempt to climb up Mount Everest. He's back. He's opposite me again in the studio. He looks uncommonly well for a man who's put his life on the line goodness knows how many times. And I understand congratulations are in order. You did it then.
We did it. We did it in 6.5 days. So.
And what was the record prior to that, Al?
It was 21 days from London to the top of Everest and back again. And we put it down to 6.5, 7 days. So we hit our target.
You hit your target. What about financial target? Let's talk about that first. Remind everybody what you're raising money for and how they can give out.
It's two things. We're raising awareness in a positive light for veterans by showing that veterans can do anything they put their mind to. And secondly, raising resources for veterans charities, in particular bereaved families that have had children left behind. Please Google search Mission Everest. It's a give wheel site. £1, £2, £5, anything people can afford would be great just to raise money for a fantastic charity.
I want to talk to you about your climb up Everest. Just remind that the personnel, I saw some photographs, a bunch of military blokes, like-minded souls, Al.
That's exactly it. We had four sort of special forces veterans, really good banter, two from the Royal Marines, two from the Army, so there was good aggressive banter all the way to the top and all the way down again.
Now, you are a colonel. Were you the leader or equal among others? All equal among others?
It was Garth was the expedition leader.
Oh, was he?
I always say when there's two leaders, there's no leader. And so Garth was, he's got the most experience, so he led the
I would imagine a bunch of blokes like that. You cannot get anything wrong. You can't say the wrong thing. You can't be last. You are just mercilessly ribbed.
That's exactly it. There's a huge amount of banter, but actually underneath there's a fantastic teamwork and spirit that, you know, if anyone drops behind or anyone has an issue, that the team will rally around them and make sure we succeed.
So you've smashed the record. What was the toughest part?
I would argue the toughest part was going from sort of an office job here in the UK. You can do lots of preparation and then being thrown into base camp where you spent 3 to 4 hours and then you literally ascended a 70% slope for 4 days in minus 30 to minus 40 winds. You know, you can't really prepare for that. But we're taught in the military just to grizz it through and fight on through, and that's what we did.
Did you ever think, hang on, I might have bitten off a bit more here than I thought?
I did, actually. I think all of us did. You know, when you serve king and country and you put your life on the line, there's no real option. It's your duty to do so. This is voluntarily sort of put forward. And there was a moment halfway up Everest where we got hit by 30 to 40 mile per hour winds. Some of the Sherpas had to go back to store oxygen. And there was a question of whether we turned back. And, right. You know, good call by Garth and some of the team. Me and Staz were sort of having a giggle at the back and said, you know, let's push on for another hour. We pushed on for another hour and it was almost the gods favoured us. The sun came up, we came up, broke the cloud base. And that was us on top of the world.
You'll have been asked this so many times by friends and families. What does it feel like when you get there?
It's awe-inspiring. It makes you realise what's important in life, I think, when you get to the top. You know, friends, families, those that you love, things that you really care about, and actually the minuscule bits and bobs that sort of tend to annoy us on a day-to-day basis are largely irrelevant.
Not everybody makes it, Al.
They don't. We turned into Camp 4, and, you know, we turned in. There was a frozen body just to the left.
I've read this, apparently, and they're perfect because of the conditions.
Preserved. Yeah. Sat down the day before, too tired to go on, and succumbed to the cold. And then, you know, going up, we saw two or three bodies being taken down by amazing crews of Sherpas that run these rescue operations to come up and help people.
Now, of course, there are claims, and you're a big lad and you're a colonel, so I'm going to say this carefully, that you've cheated. You've used xenon gas. What's this all about, Al?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people said they were cheating when we took oxygen to start with. So we've actually created a bit of a scientific breakthrough here. The use of xenon 3 to 4 weeks before
going. What does xenon do?
So xenon is a noble gas. It basically increases the red blood cell flow around the body, and it reduces the chances of high-altitude sickness. So when you're going high really fast, usually people take 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to climb Everest, they acclimatise. We didn't have any of that time, so by taking xenon gas it just reduced the impact of any brain injuries.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, none of us had a headache. We went from pretty much sea level to just under 9,000 metres within a week, and none of us had any high altitude.
And there's no side effects?
No, and this could be groundbreaking for all those crews that go up to rescue or work at high altitude, proving that xenon can reduce the impact of high altitude sickness, which is really, really important in that business.
Well, what's next then? We've had Mission Everest. What's going to be, Mission Deep Atlantic?
No, I've said seven beaches, 7 days, or seven pubs in 7 days. So something slightly easier.
Seven pubs in 7 days, you can count me
in. I think you can join us.
Seven restaurants, I could do that one.
I'm all in for it.
Mission Everest, if people want to help.
Please go Google search Mission Everest, and then on the Give Wheel site, just donate anything you can. It would be super useful, and it's for veterans charities.
Break every code in radio. Come here, give me a shake.
Thank you very
much. That's an absolute extraordinary achievement. Well done, man. Privilege seeing you, and even a pleasure getting you back.
Delighted to be here.
Next time we talk, of course, you'll be a government minister, and it'll be a totally different format. But good luck, Labour MP, Veterans Minister Al Carnes, raising money. Mission Everest is the name again. Last minute or so together. Let's talk apprenticeships. Who's been waiting? Oh gosh, John in Southwark. Let's come straight to you. Come on, John. What did you learn? Good morning to you, sir.
I started at 13 in the trade school, learning all the trades. Bricklaying, plastering, plumbing, masonry, all decorating. That was the first year. Second and third year, you did the trade you went for.
Yep.
And then I did that. And what you were talking about, Nick, we all had builders as teachers.
Right.
We didn't think. Now, you were talking about people losing tools.
Yes.
And when I was 13, we had a stamp made of our name to put on our tools. Not because you lose them, because when you took them to the pawnbroker, you got extra money.
Hang on, why did you get extra... Sorry, I've missed the connection there. Why would you get extra money?
Because the tools you got...
because they were so good. The tools were of such high quality.
Because you hadn't nicked them.
Oh,
because when you got your name on the tools...
Oh, right. When you needed to pawn them for yourself. I've got it.
Yeah, we're talking about 1953.
Got it, okay.
I was earning £2.10 a week.
Okay.
So then you've got every, quarter, 3/8, 5/8, 7/8.
Okay.
You've got the appropriate money, but I did well out of life. I retired at 51.
Was that always the plan, to retire as early as you could?
No, it was just recommendations from other people. Like, you want your kitchen done, I'll come and do it tomorrow.
Okay. No, my kitchen's all right. John, would you have got where you are without that apprenticeship?
No. I've become the top apprentice in London. I met Field Marshal Montgomery when he gave me the prize.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic. John, what a lovely story. Well done. Thank you for holding on the line, sir. I do appreciate it. Gary in Horsham have been holding on almost as long. Now, is it chef work? Is that right? You're a chef, is that right?
Hi, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Yes, I did an apprenticeship in 1983. I did a 2-year apprenticeship with the army.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the golden age. So literally you learned everything about culinary arts as well as military trade. So
arts, but isn't it just sausage and chips? No, not at all.
As the gentleman who had just gone up to Everest would attest to, it's all about nutrition, calorific. It's all about placing the right balanced meals. The army was superb at that because it gave you the tools to do that. The training was incredible.
How long were you in the military then?
So I spent 7 years as a regular soldier. I left, but I went on to be a flavorist with Schwartz, the spice company.
Okay.
And then I ended up being sort of senior innovations manager for Heinz.
All tracking back to that apprenticeship?
All tracking back, 100%. I was very fortunate to create a sports brand with David Thompson, the double Olympic gold medalist.
Am I allowed to ask its name? What is it?
Well, you can. It was called DT10 Sports. Sadly, COVID took over and I stopped. But, without that apprenticeship, without that, social business, and learning how to sort of operate and be a visionary, I'd never do what I was doing today.
Let's end it there. Such a positive note. Congratulations to you. This is unremitting support of this government initiative. Let's hope it goes really well for lots and lots of young people. And that's the full stop. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done for today. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and let me apologise in advance for almost certainly saying in the course of the next 3 hours that it's Monday. I always struggle in the aftermath of a bank holiday to recalibrate. And I struggle with two other things this morning as well. The first, as I've confessed to you many times in the past, is my notoriously awful news antennae. The reaction I sometimes have to stories belies the number of years that I've spent in this business. And the second is that at weekends I try to step back a little bit from the news agenda. Otherwise, Horatio, I shall go mad. But there is an element to some of the, well, all of the reporting of the horrors in Liverpool yesterday that should give us all considerable pause.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, four children are among dozens of people injured after a car ploughed into a crowd in Liverpool. A total of 27 people were taken to hospital from the Premier League victory parade yesterday evening. A 53-year-old local man was arrested. LBC's reporter Liam Gotting has the latest from the scene.
Well, the chaos and carnage of what happened last night is still evident here on Water Street this morning. Broken glass, beer bottles, abandoned bikes and e-scooters all scattered in the road in front of me. Officers are lined up and down the street from top to bottom, and a huge blue and white forensics tent sits in the middle of the road as police continue their investigation. We spoke to Les, who was on Water Street and saw the whole thing happen. This is what he told us.
And people started panicking upstairs where we were, trying to get the building because we were scared. But you don't like it. I mean, he's just gone, foot down, he's gone.
A 53-year-old man from the Liverpool area has been arrested and is still being held by police. Liam Gotting, LBC, Liverpool.
The government has confirmed a shift away from masters-level apprenticeships to focus on other training routes. Under-21s in England will be able to access thousands more entry-level courses instead. But some employers in the health and legal sectors have criticised the changes. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, who's been speaking to LBC, has defended the move.
Under the last government, a big drop-off in the number of apprenticeship starts for young people in particular, and that's why we're rebalancing the system with much more of a focus on young people, and that does mean taking decisions around not funding in the same way some of those level seven, those master's level qualifications, those apprenticeships, and actually tilting it back to serve young people in a much better way.
The Foreign Secretary David Lammy is visiting Norway and Iceland to discuss ways to counter the threat from Russia. There are particular concerns about the risk of sabotage to undersea cables. Britain is also exploring the use of artificial intelligence to detect hostile state activity in the Arctic. The King is to become only the second British monarch to lead the state opening of Canada's Parliament. He'll follow the precedent set by the late Queen in 1957 on his trip to Ottawa later. Charles will set out the legislative agenda of Mark Carney's government as it faces a trade war with the US. And industry figures show food inflation rose for the fourth consecutive month in May. The British Retail Consortium says food prices are now 2.8% higher than a year ago. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 87.98. That is up 80. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 19. LBC weather, most places seeing cloud and rain with some sunny spells in parts of Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Gearing up for beach days or looking to refresh your summer wardrobe? Two has you covered with 20% off all Two clothing until Tuesday the 27th of May. Shop Two for all the family this summer in-store at Sainsbury's and online at two.co.uk. Two works every time. Subject to availability, delivery charges may apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after ten, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A very good morning to you. I hope you had a lovely bank holiday weekend. I may have to repeat that occasionally just to drive home into my own pathetic brain that it is now Tuesday. Feels like a Monday, but it isn't a Monday. It's definitely a Tuesday. I hope that doesn't come as a major shock to anybody. This is a tricky one. I'm not worried about the rules of journalism and contempt of court, because I know that you understand them, and we are all grown-ups on this programme. So there is a suspect in the horrors that unfolded on the streets of Liverpool yesterday, and an arrest has been made. Charges have not been brought. We will not be discussing anything with regard to what happened, especially, except insofar as how the police chose to describe the suspect. And it is new. This is something that I don't have enough confidence in my... What's the word I want? I said news antennae in the little talk-up at the end of Nick's show. It should be a better word than that. I don't have enough confidence in my convictions, almost. I don't have enough courage in my convictions to be 100% certain that my inklings last night when this story first broke were correct. But they were. I've checked with people who are much older. Well, not older necessarily, but much more experienced and much more reliable in these matters than I am. They have chosen to describe the suspect in this case as a white British man, a 53-year-old white British man. So far it could be me. A 53-year-old white British man from the Liverpool area. And what I had to check with more experienced colleagues was that this is a new development. This is not something that would ordinarily have happened. And I think it's pretty clear why it has happened. Because of fears of far-right provocateurs either taking to social media to spread lies and misinformation about the identity, the ethnicity, the religion, the immigration history of the suspect, or, and this is where I get really worried, or had the suspect ticked some of the boxes, beloved of far-right racist provocateurs, then I can't help worrying now that the message from the police would be, we now expect violence, but we don't expect it when we tell you that the suspect is a 53-year-old white British man. And I know there is a world of difference between expect and invite, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm struggling to see where the line between the two is this morning. I'm really struggling not to see this development as a tacit admission that when the suspect in a case like this is brown or Muslim or not from these shores originally by birth, then it would somehow be, what word do I want now? Acceptable? Probably not. Unless you're one of the people minded to get involved in that kind of violence, what message do you take away from this decision to pander to your prejudices? And remember that in the case of the Southport killings, the prejudices were false. The people spreading lies and misinformation for clicks and influence were in possession of precisely zero facts. The usual suspects jumping on the usual bandwagons to whip up hatred of asylum seekers. Now they're trying to defend a woman who pleaded guilty to incitement to racial hatred after calling for a pogrom to start in hotels full of people wholly innocent of any crimes. But that is the world we live in now. That is the country we inhabit. Tell me I'm wrong. 03456060973. Tell me that this is not a surrender of sorts to the forces of hate. Why else would they make this such a top priority? Why else do they need to get the colour, the ethnicity, the nationality of the suspect into public discourse so early, if not to somehow prevent the kind of scenes that we saw on our streets this summer after the Southport killings?